Fighting and keep us out of harm's way. Bless your holy name for the presenters here tonight. We thank you for what they're going to do for us and going to do that. Bless your name and we love you now. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'd like to welcome everyone here this evening. This is a board workshop, and we will not be taking any action this evening. We don't have votes at this workshop, but we do sometimes determine a lot of things and take them to another meeting for a vote. With that said, we will go directly to number three. Representatives from OmniTrack and the Georgia Ford Railway, LLC, to discuss the Taylor County, Florida Competitiveness and Employment by Rail, CEBYR project with the board. Good evening.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Jason Smeek, and we are very excited to be here in front of you today. It's been a little while since we have provided an update on this project and been able to answer questions for you. Certainly, this has been a project that we've been working with Taylor County on for probably about 5 years now, and we have been selected for the grant. And so we'd like to spend some time this evening with you, talk through any questions that you have, and provide an update on how we see the project unfolding over the next couple of weeks, months, and frankly, over the next year. With that, let's move into some introductions. I am joined by a couple of my colleagues today. We have David Arterbright. David, maybe you can provide some introduction.
Sure. Nice to see all of you again. I represent the government affairs group for OmniTrack and the Georgia Ford Railroad. Adam Nordstrom, my partner and I, were the ones that wrote the application for the funding. And now we handed off program management. I'm going to propose to work with Jason Smeek here. He's going to do a fantastic job to us all. Operator.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Adam Nordstrom. I'm a consultant on the tracks. I work out of Washington, D.C. Do government relations, government affairs, grant writing, work very closely with Landon's boss, Representative Dunn in D.C., and other elected officials like that, and our friends at the U.S. Department of Transportation who are ultimately going to be funding this project.
Great.
I'm Anthony Cox. I'm a little new with OmniTrax, but I've been in the industry for 35 years, and I've managed these types of projects in the past.
Wonderful. And I'm Jason Smeek, and I work across all of our strategic projects for the company. So those are large construction projects, any kind of company purchases that we do, anything very strategic in nature that's mandated by the C-team is what I work together to deliver. Okay. So as I mentioned, as part of our visit today, certainly we want to reintroduce ourselves. A number of you have met us before, but we are part of the Bro Group based out of Denver, Colorado. And that is a family-owned business that covers real estate, transportation, our Great Western Oil and Gas Company, and our Three Leaf Ventures, which is a basically a fund that looks at healthcare technology and investing in that. So certainly from a expertise and a wherewithal perspective, we have the ability to deliver on this project. A little bit about OmniTrax. The Georgia Florida is part of OmniTrax. We operate short line railroads across the country and in Canada. We connect shippers with customers across the continent, really providing services such as general rail services, transloading, rail car switching, and car storage and repair. And we do have an extensive customer profile with market leaders in all areas of industry across the areas we serve, including in commodities of chemicals, frac sand, food products, aggregates, grain, anything from wind blades all the way through energy, agriculture products, forestry products, petrochemicals, and building materials. And certainly have strong connections and relationships with the class ones or the large players that you all know, as household names, BNSF, CSX, CNNS, KCSM, and EUP. And we do have 20 different short line railroads, about 400 rail customers, and 2,400 miles of track that we operate across the country. Any questions? So let's talk a little bit about the Competitiveness and Employment by Rail CEBYR project.
Give us an overview, Dave?
Yep.
No, sorry. Oh, sorry.
Is this the...
Yep.
This
is
the...
Hold on. So, we just want to remind everyone here exactly what we applied for and what we're contemplating doing. You know, those of you that live and work in Taylor County every day know this railroad serves one purpose and one purpose only. It's an 81-mile private driveway, as I like to call it, from the point of interchange with Norfolk Southern in Avail, Georgia, down to the cellulose mill in Fulton. And the reason we wrote this grant and the reason we're requesting these funds is primarily to preserve and protect the 600 living wage jobs that are at the plant today. The railroad is literally nothing more than a conveyance. We don't earn money if cellulose doesn't ship. Simple as that. So we propose to completely rebuild that railroad, all 81 miles, from Adel, Georgia, down to Foley, at a total project cost of roughly $17 million, of which half, $8.6 million, is being provided in federal funding, and the other private match, $8.6 million, will be coming from OmniTrax.
So let's talk a little bit about the background of how this grant fits. Adam, can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to. This grant program, this grant was awarded out of a competitive grant program at USDOT, Department of Transportation in Washington, D.C. They administer these funds. The program is called the Fast Lane Grant Program. We really like to come up with catchy acronyms and names. I don't actually remember what it stands for, but it is catchy. There have been several billion dollars in competitive funds awarded through this program. what brings us here today and what brings you all here today is that railroads were not, privately owned railroads were not eligible direct applicants for this funding. Now, since the awarding of this grant, a new grant program has been created where railroads are eligible applicants, but in order to improve rail assets through this grant program, a local unit of government had to apply for the funding. So that's what brings Taylor County here. It's the county with the primary benefit, it's the county that the railroad serves, and so when we started working with the county, I guess probably about, 4 or 5 years ago now, the understanding was that the county would apply for the grant and be the recipient of the funds. And so that's why you're involved in this, and we're very appreciative that you are. It makes this project possible because we couldn't have done it without a local grant applicant to support us. The objectives, and I think one of the reasons, there's probably two primary reasons why this grant was selected, and Dave already alluded to one of those, and it's the large number of jobs in this community that depend upon rail service. The second of those reasons is represented by Landon here, which is Representative Dunn. One of the first things that I think he did when he came to the U.S. House of Representatives was he picked up the phone and he called the Secretary of Transportation, and I'm sure he used some colorful language as he had forceful language as he's apt to do, and really strongly encouraged them to fund this program. So we're also very appreciative of Congressman Dunn and what he did to make this possible. And we want to help deliver on him so he can deliver to his constituents.
So as part of our discussion this evening, we wanted to give a little bit of background on the different project elements of railroad rehabilitation and some terminology, some education for all of us here in the room, and David, maybe you can see
sure.
That.
Okay. I did remember what Fastlane stood for, and it's actually quite appropriate to this discussion. It's an acronym for Fixing America's Surface Transportation, which is exactly what this is designed to do. Forgive me for my fifth grade logic here, but for those of you that may not be familiar with railroads, railroading, or why we even care, railroad track structure is really no different than a highway. It suffers freeze-thaw cycles, it gets beat up through use, it degrades and deteriorates, and eventually it needs to be repaved. This particular line has completely reached the end of its economic life. We would have been struggling, frankly, without this grant. But our intention would be, when we're done, here's my analogy of what a beat-up, worn-out railroad looks like. Just like that broken-up macadam, rail track does get this bad as it degrades. This is not a railroad, so fear not. This is a picture I gleaned off the web, but it's illustrative of the issue. When we're done, that's what it's going to look like.
All right.
That's what a functioning superhighway looks like from a rail perspective. The thing to understand about how we do what we do is we have a system designed to support the weight of freight cars that move down a track. And that's obviously, when you've gone over grade crossing, you've seen it's rails that are sitting on top of what are called tie plates, that are sitting on top of ties, that are then in a crib of ballast and sub-ballast. And so maintaining that entire structure is what's required to see the sheet of glass type after picture that we have. Here is one more picture of how the loads are distributed from a train down into the ties and surface. And this is, honestly, this is what we're doing with this product. This is nothing more than a plain vanilla rehab of the assets that you see in place right there. We're going to come in, we're going to dig up all the old foul ballast, we're going to put down new cross ties where they're needed, we're going to fix the drainage problems, and we'll replace sections of rail as needed, and that's what it takes to do a project like this to rehabilitate the road.
And Dave, while we're explaining terms of art used and unused, grab this foul ballast. Do you want to explain what
that is? Yeah, thanks, Adam. The ballast is not only what provides the support for the track structure, but it also helps the water seep away from the rail, because the water is our worst enemy. Mm-hmm. Right? When it starts to cool, just like on the road, then things start to deteriorate much faster. So that's what foul ballast is. It's mud and dirt and silt and everything else that's gotten in the middle of it over the years and years that we would clean out and replace with fresh mud. And this is, I guess, just an example of one of the bridges that we have. We'll also be replacing ties on the bridges themselves. Fortunately, we were able to get what's called a categorical exclusion from the environmental protection work, because we're not actually doing any work in any navigable rivers or things that would impact fish, game, wildlife, or other sensitive areas. Here's a typical example of one of our bridges and the type of work that we will do to either strengthen, enhance, or in some cases replace in kind. Ken asked some very, very hard-hitting, pertinent questions here a little bit earlier, engineer to engineer, about how we could actually pull some of this stuff off while trains were running. And I think we gave him a decent one. Okay. Tony, are you?
Sure. Thank you for hearing us today. Basically, what the project is intending to do is replace roughly 115,000 railroad ties. There's typically 3,200 ties per mile out there, and we're going to be replacing about every third tie out there. 10,500 lineal feet of rail. We're going to replace any rails out there that need to be replaced. Along with that, the ballast is going to be placed out there for surfacing the track so we can establish the drainage and the grade back where it should be. There's 15 repairs to bridges. It's going to be in-kind replacement components. The picture that you saw previously, right there, what you're seeing there is what's called a vent, and it's the piles that are up, and then the piece on top is a cap. Then you have the stringers, and then you have the ties on the top of the rail. And what we'll do is replace any deteriorated components out there that need to be replaced on these structures. Also, the project is going to improve 125 existing highway grade crossing surfaces, and we'll be retiming 19 of the signalized crossings out there to accommodate the new track speeds. Trains that move at 10 miles an hour is about a 6 minute mile, 25 mile per hour is about a 2.5 minute mile. Okay. Thank you.
So, as part of the overview, obviously the importance of this line, certainly in where Taylor County and the region fit, along with the different interconnections to Norfolk Southern CSX and location here. Really, the important note here that I have at the bottom in the kicker is that this is taking place entirely within the right-of-way of the railroad, so that from a scope perspective, we understand where that work will be performed.
And Jason, why don't you go back up that real quick? So it's 81 miles from Norfolk Southern Interchange at AL down to Foley, and then CSX Interchange is equipment, right? So in order for the trains to get all the way down here, right now you're limited to 10 miles an hour or less, and in some places a fair bit less. So it is a long haul to get down here, and that really decreases. So that goes to the point of the project, is if you can move those trains safer, more efficiently, and faster, you can provide better service to the facilities here that currently use the railroad, and then hopefully, you know, we can attract new business as well. Right now, there's all kinds of operational inefficiencies that come from that slowness. The big railroads don't want to give you cars because they don't want the cars to go into a hole for 3 or 4 days on their way down here, because they need to use those assets all the time. So it creates all kinds of costs and inefficiencies, and by improving this line, you're improving the competitiveness of the whole county, because you're going to have a real and truly functioning railroad at the end of the project. And that's a long way to go at 10 miles an hour.
And let me... I want to put an explanation on something Tony said here, because the real public benefit out of this project, which we just glossed right over, is the resurfacing of the 125 grade crossings that we traversed on that 81 miles. I know you've taken calls personally from people that don't like their cars going over the crossing. I've been given some of those calls. Honestly, it was the beginning of our partnership together 4 years ago. As we said, help us solve this and we'll also solve the public grade crossing problem at the same time. So we're excited that that's going to happen. It's the perfect time to do it. When you have to rip the railroad track up to fix it anyway, you can fix the grade crossings at the same time as you're going through it. That's what we intend to do. The other thing that an average motorist will see is that if we're operating at 10 miles an hour and you're the unlucky one as the fourth car back in the train, when we're done, we'll be getting through that average grade crossing 2.5 times faster than we would. And so in theory, instead of, you know, maybe spending 5 or 10 minutes there, you might only spend 2 or 3. So we hope everyone's as excited as we are about that.
If I can ask a question right now.
Yes.
So going back, you're going to redo every crossing.
Mm-hmm.
Every crossing.
125. Yeah.
Okay. The next question is, will there be any kind of interruption to the service right now that's going to Foley?
No. The plan would be to do the work, what we call under traffic, meaning we would continue to run trains. The nice thing is our operation is limited enough to serve Foley. Now, once our train goes through, we have the bulk of the day to continue doing whatever work we would want to do that day. And then the crews generally clean up at the end of that day shift, and the railway is restored, and then they start again the next day. So it'll actually go pretty quick.
So you want to explain how a track gang works as they go down the, down the road?
What we typically do is establish a work window where we have an outage on the trains where they don't come through at a particular time of the day, and allow the contractor to do their work. And when they get done, the track is repaired and passable behind it. I'm sure some of you may have seen some of the large tie gang projects on maybe the Class 1 railroads where they're coming through and they replace ties and ballast and service and do all that at once. We'll just have a smaller concentration of that type of work going on. Yeah.
What will happen to the railroad ties that you remove? What will you do with them?
Well, the plan is to properly dispose of them. They'll be removed from the track and then stacked up on the railroad right-of-way until at such time a crew comes through to pick them up and then trucks them to an approved facility for disposal.
If any of the public were interested in any of those, what would they do? Call you?
We could make arrangements. There'll be a project manager out there all the time during construction, and there's some that are worth taking home. I'm certain that can be handled.
Thank you.
Sure. Any more questions?
Not for me. Anybody else?
I got one. By doubling the speed, or a little more than doubling the speed, does the safety factor go up on that?
Well, obviously, inherently by being able to increase your speed, your track is in better condition. And the Federal Railroad Administration has very minimum guidelines for particular speeds of track. And just an example, a 39-foot segment of track at 10 miles per hour is required to have 5 non-effective ties effectively distributed over that area. Going to a Class 2 speed, you have to have 8, which is essentially is the every third tie, because you've got 24 ties over 39 foot segment.
So you're going to put arms and lights at other places, not now, or is it all going to be just like it is now?
That is typically determined by the road authority, and there is a mechanism out there from the federal government. It's called Section 130 funds. And railroads can apply for it, cities can apply for it, counties, they can apply for those funds and ask that a particular grade crossing, if they deem it necessary, to be improved with active warning devices.
So the plan right now is that if there's an active warning device there, there will be an active warning device after the project. And if it's passive, it will remain like crossbucks.
Right.
It will remain passive, but the crossbucks will be updated for the taking of this.
The UPCD.
Yeah.
Yeah. The
a number of years ago, and your motorist may have mentioned this to you, someone did a study that found out people have become socialized to standard street signs. They know what a stop and a yield sign looks like. But everybody doesn't necessarily know what a railroad crosswalk means they're supposed to do. We all know it means stop, look, and listen for a train, but the modern standards have now required that in addition to a crosswalk at each crossing, we'll also be installing either a yield sign or a stop sign as well. As an extra measure of safety, so motorists know what to do.
And that too is determined by the road authority. If they feel like it needs to be a stop sign,
or the Department of Transportation will be involved in the safety part of it.
Or the county. It's going to be the road authority, whoever is the authority over that.
If one crossing county roads, you can tell us whether you'd rather have a yield or a stop sign.
So what this slide depicts is the breakdown of the funding. You can see the grade crossings are going to be a federal contribution of 2.2. Bridge repairs are federal 296. Private match is 399. Tie replacement for the federal match and non-federal 6. That's pretty much the way it goes, but at the bottom, it's a 50-50 match between federal and private funding. These days, it costs about $1.5 million to build a mile of railroad. And a lot of that's going to depend on how many bridge structures and grade crossings and fill, you know, the complexity of that, but just a typical piece of railroad track. So, as you can see, with $17 million investment, we're going to be able to rehabilitate 81 miles of track out there.
So I also provided an illustration of how we're all thinking about the grant reimbursement process. So, importantly, as part of this, OmniTrax and the railroad would act as manager for contractors involved in the project, and there would be a grant reimbursement process that works to submit to the DOT the details of any work performed and then request reimbursement. So we've started to talk through the process of how that would work with the railroad, with OmniTrax, and with Taylor County and the FRA and DOT from a submission perspective, and that's outlined at the bottom of the slide.
The key point to all this is that at no point in this have we anticipated county funds being used for the project. The county would be the applicant, the county would be the recipient of the funds. So the work is done. Georgia Florida Railroad pays for the work, then submits the invoices to the county to submit to the federal government. The federal government wires money back, and then that money to the county, and then the county reimburses OmniTrax for its work. So at no point is there a county tax dollar involved.
I was given a week to the governor, the Taylor County grant agreement, this document, which I spent considerable time just reading over. And numerous times it's mentioned that this is a $17+ million project. And 50% of that is through grant funds. And we want to thank our congressman for making those grant funds available. The other half of it will be the private part, which is from OmniTrax. Now, in looking at what's budgeted for each item, ties or whatever, I don't recall seeing that there's any component in this thing that would reimburse the county for its expenditures. There's going to be considerable amount of staff time. It already has been. It's been dedicated to this project. As you know, no grants are free. There's reporting requirements. Mm-hmm. Could you speak to that? Is there a component that we're not aware of so that this small rural county
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. So under the federal grants, things, expenditures, and this is one of the reasons why we have been very careful not to incur, recognizing LaWanda's staff time and Mr. Bishop's time and all the other folks who have been great and worked with us on this. We've been very careful not to like engage engineers and folks like that to do this, because those expenditures before the grant is signed are not reimbursable from federal funds. Once the grant agreement is signed and the money is obligated, in the third from bottom line here, we see project management and professional services is budgeted in there. Theoretically, you could, there are ways for your costs as a county to be included in that. And then we also envision hiring and retaining two additional consultants who would be, who would report to the county. And that would be folks to verify the quantities and quality of work performed, so that you can, you're not a railroad expert, right? So you need somebody to tell you, yes, the work was done appropriately, and then.
So there is a line item.
Yes, sir, I'm sorry. It's in this chart, it's labeled task, it's under task.
How much is occupancy?
It's $137,270.
$137,000?
Yeah, and I suspect.
That's not a lot.
It is not. I suspect that that's probably a low number. I don't want to negotiate against myself because people are going to have to bid for those services, but when there are cost overruns under the grant agreement, that would be the responsibility of Omnitracs to take
care of it. My line of question is not to give you a hard time.
No, sir. That is a good question.
Rail project is going to be a real benefit to one of our largest employers of the Georgia Pacific plant. Up to commission 600 jobs, plus, I hadn't thought about it, but when you brought it up, there's a safety factor, the crossings will be upgraded. That's certainly a benefit to the community. But, we have to keep in mind we are a rural, fiscally constrained county, and if there's any way we can tap into a part of this as the process goes along, we'd be open to some discussions on that.
And I really admire, I'm sorry, go ahead, sir.
All right, let me finish now. Does LaWanda and Melody Cox, our staff, work with all four of you, or which one of you is the principal that they call on when they've got a problem?
That would be me, Jason Smith. Yeah. So I'm in charge of the project.
I'm in charge of the project,
right.
All right, you notice that LaWanda is a female. Ms. Cox is a female. LaWanda can be just as tough as she needs to be. I say that, LaWanda as a compliment. So don't think now that we're a little rural county and we've got a couple of ladies, and I say that ladies, in high positions, that they're pushovers. They're going to ask you tough questions. I think what we're going to ask of you is to cooperate, be extremely respectful, and I am assured, if I can breathe well, that multiple times it's stated in this grant agreement that if there are any cost overruns on this project, it's the responsibility of Omnitracs and not the county.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Now, guide me through the reimbursement process one more time. You guys are going to contract out and run up a bill. We'll use that
for we will work to write up a request for proposal.
Right, and you're going to pay that contract.
And we will build that and then work with you guys to address any of the requirements that you have from a Taylor County perspective. Select that contractor. Contractor will then perform work, and then they will issue an invoice to us. And then we would then go through the process of packaging for submission to DOT all the required details that need to be submitted through the grants portal.
You left out a step where you pay the contract.
For that's
we will be right.
Pay the contract,
and
that
works. And then boy, we will be right.
Exactly.
Melania, you got all this?
I got it.
You got your work cut out now.
But you're okay. He's rolled this a few times already.
That's true. Just all right. He said that Omnitracs would select the contractor. I would expect that with us being in the grantee, that you guys would actually, under our purchasing policy, have to handle the RFP process with them being a participant in the selection committee, but the selection actually has to be done by you guys.
That's the way it is in the race and matrix. We discussed that last week.
Yeah.
Actually the role that OmniTrax would play is to be on the bid committee with Taylor County for the contractor selections.
We want to be sure that we provide, obviously, the expertise in rail to you as well.
Let's meet all the help we get. Now, let me ask our attorney. You've read this grant
more than once.
I have. Probably several times.
I've got some questions.
And you've been, I want to give you an opportunity to give this board some questions and any advice you have for us.
Whenever you're ready.
I'm ready.
Well, number one, let me just say that I spoke with Scott Williams, who prepared this agreement, and he emailed it to me on March the 18th. I have called him twice since that time and haven't been able to make contact with him. So if you can help me with that, I would appreciate it.
Absolutely.
The contract that I first read was a style contract between Taylor County and Georgia and Florida Railroad LLC for FRA Fast Lane Grant Program Competitiveness and Employment Rail CEBYR project. Okay, I didn't hear Omni Railroad. It's not in here. Okay, that's number one. Number two, with regard to on the first page, it talks about the scope of work. And it says that the county, at the last sentence or last phrase, is the county and its designee will perform the county's obligations under a cooperative agreement in good faith. Okay? And then, if you turn on the second page, under B4, it says the county will perform its obligations under the terms and conditions in good faith. Certainly we want to do it in good faith, but the other side needs to say that they're going to do it in good faith also. And so I would request that Mr. Williams put in that whoever we're contracting with to do this would do their job in good faith, because there's no place in this that says that they will. Okay? That's number one. And of course I need to talk to him about this, not y'all, but I mean just kind of give him a heads up that I do have some things that I would like to speak to him about. And I do like the phrase on page 3 that says not a pledge of the county's credit or the state's credit or any properties owned by the county or the state. I'd like that to be placed in there also. We don't want any obligation with regard to spending any money in this particular instance except for paying me. No, I'm teasing on that.
I see your board members flipping through the packet we gave them, and so the document you're referencing, I don't believe they have in front of them, because you're the only person who has it. The document they have in front of something else. So this.
That's the draft.
I saw it on the faces. So.
I understand that, but see, this, it was my responsibility. That
yes,
I got a call from, I think, you or somebody saying that Mr. Williams is going to send me this. It was you, right? Yeah, okay. And we talked about it a little bit. I said, I'm real happy to get that. With regard to a little more information on what's called pass-through. Now, pass-through, as I understand it, means the money comes to us and it's passed through to the railroad to pay the $8 million that is the grant. Is that simplistic enough? But it's true, right? Am I right on that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure that it says that GFRR, this is on page 4, may invoice the county at regular intervals or upon completing any project component. GFRR shall invoice no more than 42.63% of the total project expenses for non-grade crossing components and 100% of grade crossing components to assure GFRR has fulfilled the minimum in-kind match at all times. What exactly does that mean? Take a stab at that one.
It's unnecessarily complex. So we are going to get to the documents that are in front of you. So just for clarification here, there's two agreements. So the agreement that you have here covers the agreement the county will enter into with USDOT. The agreement that the council is discussing here is the agreement that Georgia Florida Railroad will enter into with you to make sure that you don't have to spend any money and it's our money to go there.
Right. Another way to put it is the agreement Johnson is a grant.
Yes, sir.
This is our agreement with the folks that are going to be doing the work, and the money is going to be passing through to them. This is what I read through it.
So I'm sorry for that digression.
Sure.
I just want to make sure we're... Is everybody with me?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So that is an unnecessarily and regrettably complex paragraph. When we originally wrote this grant, we wrote it as a 50-50 grant. That's what they like to see. They like to see 50% federal funds, 50% other sources of funds. Then, after they made the award of the grant, they realized that at DOT, their accounting of the way they promised Congress they were going to spend the money wasn't going to work at 50-50. So in order to keep the entire project a 50-50, the $17 million project and it's $8.5 million federal, roughly. What they did is they're going to make the grade crossing money, so the money that goes into resurfacing the grade crossings, doing all the ballast work and stuff under that, that is 100% federal funds. So then what we had to do is we had to rejigger with this impossible percentage of 42, I don't even remember what it's
42.63.
Right. So when you take everything else and make all the other project components 42.63% federal funds, at the end of the day, I already got it up there. That bottom line item there comes out to $8.67 million. So it's, I don't like it either, it's clunky. But that's what's going on.
Well, I think I sort of started to understand it when y'all talked about grade crossings earlier, but I didn't know nothing about no grade crossings when I was reading
it. It is, it's less clunkier than the first draft.
Okay.
If that's any consolation.
All right. On the same page, page 4, subparagraph B, it says, within 10 days, and listen to this one, y'all, now, because 10 days is a short time, right? We all agree that 10 days from now, goes by like that, especially the older you get, right? Okay. Within 10 days of the date that an invoice is submitted by GFRR, the county will seek funds from FRA. In other words, we got the boogie, okay? Or inform GFRR of any deficiencies in the invoice. So you only got a short time to look at the invoice. And then the county will disperse funds to GFRR within 10 days of receipt from FRA. That's a very short time for our staff to do that. And I'm not saying they can't do it. I'm kind of informing our staff that that's a short time.
Let me make one framing comment here. We asked our associate, what's that?
Yeah.
We asked our associate, Scott Williams, to write this contract because, frankly, we didn't have any experience with ever drafting a similar agreement between a railroad and a public body. But the direction we gave him, and this is important when you finally connect with him, is he was to design a document and continue to massage it until you were comfortable with it and the commissioners were comfortable. So in no way are we trying to handcuff you or create anything onerous. We want you to massage it so that you're satisfied that it's a document you can work with and the commissioners can accept.
I appreciate that, and yeah. I wasn't trying to put anything down. And that's why I mentioned initially that we didn't make contact telephonically, in the times after on the weekend that I read this.
Yeah. Okay.
Y'all get that?
The other observation, if I may, about the 10-day thing, sir, is I alluded to two extra consultants that LaWanda and her team and our team have envisioned being part of this, and one would be that a contractor whose job it is to submit those materials.
Right.
So I think we have failed and something is broken here if that's LaWanda and Melody doing that. We're envisioning, under the grant, hiring someone who will perform that.
Well, that's another point. But, and this is the general gist of this agreement, is it keeps saying all through it that the grantee does this, the grantee does that, the grantee does that. And if somebody is reading it say, some of our constituents reading that, they would think that we're going to do all this, and we're not, because that's, y'all are going to do, or y'all are going to do it, and we're going to, we're just, it's sort of like when we do a revenue bond, okay, you know, like for instance, if there's a project in Florida, we have projects where we're the conduit, and we have to go to circuit court to get approval, but we don't do anything, but we're the conduit, and that's what I'm thinking that we are. We're the conduit of this money. Of course, we got to take care of it, of course, but to get this project done. So don't misunderstand what I'm saying at all, that I'm trying to throw a monkey wrench into anything as a practical matter. It was funny, my granddaughter's over in Thailand, and she sent us a video of a monkey coming into our apartment. You know, I'd jump up and I'd be running, but she's kind of different. But anyway, I'm not trying to throw any wrenches into it at all. But that's just one thing that I want to make clear. And my client, which is the county, will tell you that my contracts are try to be simple as possible so everybody can understand them. There's one other thing that I wanted to make clear, and I'm not going to go any further because this is one thing, because this is pretty slick, okay? It's on page 6. Under GFRR. And when y'all first came here, I told you that one of the things that I like is I like for venue to be in Taylor County. If there's a problem with the agreement, if there's a problem with the contract, if something goes wrong and there's going to be a lawsuit. But listen to this. With the exception of claims against the federal government, any suit brought to enforce this contract or to determine any dispute under this contract may be brought only in the state and federal courts located in or having jurisdiction that includes Taylor County, Florida. The parties agree to submit to the personal jurisdiction of the courts located in or having jurisdiction over Taylor County. What this is saying is that we're going to end up in the Northern District of Florida, federal court. And that's not what I wanted in the agreements. I wanted them in the Taylor County, so exclusively in Taylor County, of this agreement. Now, of course, the feds got their deal right too, but I thought that was good wordsmith.
Yeah, I didn't read it that way when I read it.
But that's the way it is.
Yeah.
That's the way it is.
I hear what you're saying.
Okay. There are other things in here, but I'll talk to Mr. Williams about, and believe me, you know, we're all for it, but, you know, my job is trying to protect my client, which are these folks here.
Well, and what I say when I'm trying, and I appreciate your comments on that, and, you know, Scott's graph, so, but he's, Jason and Scott had a number of conversations about, you know, make this work, right? So I think you're gonna have a good conversation with him when you have it. When I'm working on regulations and statutes and stuff in Washington, we always put the laws in your pen. And when I'm writing a law, I try and draft it, you know, for, if it's something that Congressman Dunn or somebody like that is going to help me introduce and carry it, you know, you want to write it the best way you can write it. So, you know, I encourage you to, you know, get that pen out and get it the way you need it to be, because...
Well, I appreciate that, because whenever we get a grant from the state, they will not move. They will not change it at all, and it's always in William County. And I know I don't look like it, but I've been doing this a while, and I can't stand that. But we can't get the grant unless we agree to that. You know, I tell these folks every time.
That's right. Yes, sir.
But if we can work something out, that's fine. Yeah. And the other thing, like I said, I would like the agreement to say that, number one, most important is that, in simplistic terms, that GFRR is going to, for lack of a better term, do the work for us. So my client's constituents want to say, well, y'all agreed to do all this work, you know, because it's, you know, like the plans, you know, we're supposed to present the plan, we don't know how to do that. I ain't going to do it, I don't know how to do it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we would really benefit, I would think, from a definitional or a framing or a whereas or something like that, right?
Right off the bat.
Right at the top.
Right at the top. I think with a big bold font.
Whatever color you want.
Well, thank you all for listening to me. I appreciate it.
We'll communicate that back to Scott and make sure it gets in touch with me.
Do y'all understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Do you have any questions? I always tell people, there is no stupid question. It's stupid not to ask it. But if you ask a stupid question, I'll say that's stupid, but I'll be
Thank you.
Thank y'all.
Thank you. I have no more questions.
Chair?
Yes.
I have a question. I have a question.
Yes.
I had a chance to go to Washington, D.C. last week, and we went by Congressman Dunn's office. He visited with his top aide, and I relayed to him the thanks for doing the hard work. The Board of County Commissioners of Taylor County Citizens do appreciate this grant and this loan that he got. Definitely. It's just so vital to our economy.
Did a resolution for him after he did.
Yeah. But Scott Coons and I from the North Central Florida Region Planning Council had five people in the office of Congressman Dunn. They spelled with Scott, Al Lawson, Ted Yoho, and Monte Julio. We went to all of those offices last week in D.C. to let them know that we expect and we want that help.
Yes, sir.
We'll do whatever we can to help them do to the we survive. Appreciate it.
So let's talk a little bit about project schedule. I did have LaWanda and Melody print out that for you in the packet as well. So one of the things that I like to do is build these, which is somewhat sick, some might say, but I love building out Gantt charts, as these are called. So we've been working a long time to get us to this point where we are imminently awaiting the grant agreement from FRA, and have been doing a lot of prep work for this, including getting our engineering teams out to review all of those crossings. That's actually happening this week as well. So they're out there actively working to catalog and prepare what's called the PE, or the preliminary engineering document, that you'll see referenced in the SOW and the grant agreement. We will be working through the pre-construction activities, frankly, from the end of 2018 all the way through the end of 2019. That includes working through the grant agreement and finalization and execution. So as soon as we receive that, that'll obviously be presented to you. And any questions or issues, we can talk through from a agreement perspective as well through the Jordan Foyer Railway. The detailed project work plan, schedule, and budget is one of the first deliverables that we have as part of our grant with the government. And that will entail what does the overall schedule look like and what are the key milestones that are required for us to execute against the grant itself. Project management plan is what that's formally called, or you'll hear PMP probably throughout the time that we're working together. Stakeholder agreements and then preliminary engineering plan set, that PE. We want to complete basically by the middle of this year, and that includes as well the diagnostic team assessment report that engineering will be working through, as I mentioned earlier. Once we complete that, that'll be then submitted to the FRA, and that's approximately in the middle of the chart here, PE plan set review and approval. As part of the grant, they then approve that PE. And that then leads to the completion of the final engineering design set. And that design set then, stipulates how the work needs to be performed from an engineering perspective. Once all that is complete, then that is also reviewed by the FRA and then approved. And then we move into, at that point, construction activities, which are envisioned really around the Q4 timeframe to start. Now, important to note with all these dates is that we are going to work as expeditiously as possible to get that done. So we're hoping that we can obviously hit these dates or be even more efficient in hitting these dates than is depicted here. We will then work to advertise that construction RFP with you or through you, as we've discussed. And then there will be a selection process to select the contractor that is best suited to work through that construction. And then at that point, we will work through the mobilization and construction start, end of Q4, and then work together with the contractors to complete the rail rehabilitation, which we expect to, again, start in around Q4, end of Q4, and then really take the remainder of 2020 to complete. Once that's complete, and throughout the process of completing that work, as envisioned and discussed with Luanda, we would then expect that there would be a CEI or a construction engineering inspector to ensure that that work is performed and to the grant specifications and the engineering design. And that would be throughout the process and including at the end of the construction period. Throughout this entire process, you guys have mentioned as well before, the construction project management and project closeout phase covers that entire window. Certainly from our perspective, we will have boots on the ground managing that project. I will also be responsible and accountable from OmniTrax's perspective to ensure that this is delivered, and we'll be working together with Taylor County to do so. Once we complete the work, we have the construction completion confirmation and then a final performance report that's required to be submitted to basically find that the work has been completed according to specifications, and that then closes the grant. Any additions?
Well, we want to sort of end our discussion on one fun note here later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We
got some stuff.
Yeah.
We get tons of fun together. So key project roles and accountability is basically dumbed down as best as we can to make it clear the different areas of accountability. We've got the FRA, Federal Railroad Administration piece, obviously Taylor County's role as stakeholders, and then Georgia Florida and OmniTrax as stakeholders as well. From a FRA perspective, government stakeholder management, we did receive the CE or the environmental clearance for this. The approval of the PE or the preliminary engineering document plan set, approval of the final design, and then review of all the grant reporting deliverables. And there is a schedule in our agreement with the government to provide regular reporting. That we would work together to provide all of the required inputs that are necessary to submit that to the government, and work together with a grant administrator type role to submit that with Taylor County.
Can I make a comment on your project schedule in there? It gives a reference to the preliminary engineering report being finished in June.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say it has, I'm trying to find my notes, but it had construction beginning, is it at the end of June?
So the process for the construction phase certainly has to do with getting to the contractor that can actually perform the work, and we are required to go through the process with the FRA for the preliminary and the actual design. In order to ensure that we have the work performed according to the design, we need to complete that design as part of that process and then include the specifics for that contractor to then be able to bid on. So that will be an input into that process of selecting that contractor.
Okay,
for complete construction work.
Yeah, I'm coming to this is you've got the PMP or the project management plan being completed or proposed to be completed May 30th.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the PE of the preliminary engineering plan set finished and FRA review at the end of June. Mm-hmm. Between those two, on your next project set, you're showing RFP completions and issues for Taylor County CEI and grants administrator. We are going to select a CEI firm in June,
mm-hmm.
that only being 3 months away, this is like you have to do it now.
Yep.
Because we have a month worth of solicitation once we get the RFP package ready, and then negotiations with those professional services after that fact. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing that that's something that's going to have to be the board in April.
Absolutely.
I think we said the second mm-hmm. meeting in April was our target mm-hmm. for some of these documents to be approved by the board, because we've been working on the draft RFP documents for several months.
Yes.
It's quite complicated.
Since the end of last year.
Yes, it's been a long time. And so that was our target, was the second meeting in April. If we can get the draft reviewed and on the agenda, the second meeting in April for maybe the agreement, the funding agreement. I haven't seen the grant agreement yet. And then we have the RFP documents.
Correct.
This is an RFP for the CEI services?
And grant administration.
I just haven't seen the CEI services.
We haven't finished it yet.
Yep. Correct.
The CEI involvement will be pretty much up to every family to come up with all the
That's why I was asking, because I was going to be the one writing the CEI RFP, but I just had to share that.
We've been working on it for months, and if you recall, when we started this process, none of the staff in-house has rail experience. And if you recall, we had a discussion about that. And so we have passed documents back and forth several times. And it's in your hands.
Right now. In this regard, revision stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be shared imminently. I've got, it's actually on my computer this week. So.
Okay. We realized we have some pretty tight turnarounds.
That's what I was just noticing, that this is like Conrad was alluding to. You know, 10 days is pretty quick, and actually 2 months is even quicker.
Yeah, well, and I think it is important to note that I'm trying to ensure that there is comfort through this meeting of the involvement that we have from the Georgia Florida and from Omnitrax. As part of the discussion around timelines, it's very important to know that we are working to support you guys and provide all that information as part of that process. So, for example, for the submissions to the grants portal, it is our responsibility and accountability to package all of the details behind an invoice and make sure that that's able to be rapidly entered into the portal. The process of doing that, frankly, is ensuring that all that data gets into the portal. But the packaging of that and provision of that is what Omnitrax will be doing to support that process. So from a, did you have any other questions?
No, just the timeline.
From a Taylor County perspective, it's envisioned the county, state, federal stakeholder management. Obviously, as you mentioned, Mr. Deps, you've already done some of that, working in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Issuing the RFP for the CI grants administrator and contractors and management. And we talked about that a little bit this morning as well, or this afternoon as well as during this meeting, how we process the RFP and who takes lead on that. We'll obviously talk through that from a requirements perspective from Taylor County and work through that. We want to be sure that we provide you with the support that is needed there if you do execute that RFP or send that RFP out to the marketplace.
I believe, now, it's my understanding that as a grantee, mm-hmm. we would be responsible for issuing the RFP, and that we would ask for a partnership with you guys as far as making the selection, mm-hmm. especially for the construction
mm-hmm.
portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Doesn't say that either.
We've been
discussing that.
We've been discussing that.
Oh, okay.
Today.
I'm out of the loop on that.
What are those in the center of the county responsibility report, five and balance, that whole schedule, project meetings with FRA? What would that include?
So there are regular status updates that are required, and there will be project calls that I will work to facilitate with you with the FRA on the project process.
Progress report.
Project stuff.
You already have
a lot.
Many.
Yeah, pretty much. The meeting is a 30 to 60 minute conference call.
And that's a lot of that is to ensure that that FRA is also there facilitating any questions that we're working together to partners throughout this process. Grant reporting deliverables, those are listed in the grant agreement, and those will be assisted through the use of the CI and the grants administrator. Again, provision of all the details that you guys would need for that would then be provided by OmniTrax in that process. Financial reports, and then reimbursement of the payments back to OmniTrax would be also a Taylor County, Florida responsibility and accountability. And then third-party inspection of work performed, that was an ask to ensure that we have a third party through the CEI that could then perform an inspection of the work that's being performed.
And those checks back to OmniTrax will be post-reimbursement from FRA?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And then grant closeout reporting, again, one of those reporting requirements. These are all listed out in detail through the agreement and online. There's templates and details on how to submit that. Again, we work together with the grants administrator role to perform that function. And then Georgia, Florida, obviously the internal stakeholders, our contractor and federal stakeholder management, development of the project work plan, development of the preliminary engineering plan set, inputs, as I mentioned, for all the grants reporting deliverables, development of the final design through our engineering teams, and then the discussion around issuing the RFP for contractor advocacy. We talked about how we want to handle that. Taylor County would be taking the lead on that piece with us as a partner. And then requesting funds to reimburse the work performed and paying the contractors would be OmniTrax's responsibility, and then delivery of the Foley sub to a state of good repair.
With the exception of the CEI, that would be paid directly by the Taylor County.
CEI and grants administrator are the roles that were contemplated, at least in that RFP with LaWanda. Does that answer the question?
No. I see you got the next to the last one says requesting funds to reimburse work performed and OmniTrax paying contractors. You would pay the actual construction contractor.
Yeah, those are rail. Contract.
Yeah,
yeah,
rail.
Yes, yeah,
rail contract.
Yep. No, I think it's important. I'm sorry, Council. Go ahead.
I got a question. In the contract that I read, OmniTrax is not mentioned anywhere. Why is that? It's Georgia and Florida Railroad LLC.
Well, I mean, usually our independent railroads are standalone companies that are the ones that, you know, enter into agreements. OmniTrax itself is just a holding company, a non-rail operating company.
We'll talk to Mr. Williams about that.
Okay. But that's the answer to your question. That's
I understand. Question. I understand.
Okay. So let's move into grant agreement documents. So there was a printout that was provided, I understand, to you before the weekend that has the detailed cover sheets and the documents behind them. And Adam will take us through summaries and some of the contents for you today.
Thank you. I'm sorry, was there a question for Jason?
All right. Thank you.
Let's see here. So the stack of documents that you were looking through before is the agreement that the county would enter into with the federal government, because the county is the grantee. And so this agreement, and we've already discussed, and Mr. Bishop's asked a number of questions about the agreement that we'll enter into, that the railroad will enter into, or that Omnitrax and the railroad will enter into with the county. This agreement consists of five parts. It's a standard form, and Mr. Bishop observed also earlier, a lot of times you do these grants, they are not, they're not keen on negotiating these provisions. These tend to be fairly take it or leave it, and that's the nature of this beast. The cover sheet is just what it sounds like. I actually don't have it included in here, but it's just going to list the counties, the grantee, and it'll give some summary information. They haven't provided it to us yet, but it will come here in the next couple weeks. The statement of work is a fairly substantial document. That's the second attachment, and it's broken into seven sections. It summarizes where the funds are coming from, why the project's being undertaken, what the desired end state of the project is, where it is. But the key part is section five, which is the actual description of the work. And Anthony did a good job of walking us through what those elements are. The key thing about the statement of work, and the reason why the statement of work is important, is because any work that we were to perform and attempt to submit an invoice for reimbursement that was not covered by the statement of work, the feds aren't going to reimburse it. And so that's why this document exists, is to define what we're actually spending the money on. So 115,000 railroad ties, 125 grade crossings, things like that. So, and it's also a pretty good summary if you're looking for just a summary of what is actually going on here. That's a good document to use and refer to. The project coordination section in section six of this, I mean, it's pretty obvious. It's Georgia Florida Railroad, Taylor County, USDOT. Those are the three primary actors here, and the statement of work is just spelling that out so that it's clear that we all have to coordinate and work together on the same team. And then there's a number of project management tasks. These are boilerplate things that FRA includes in section seven at the end of all of their statement of work. Yes, ma'am.
Do we have a final approved statement of work?
Yes, ma'am. The statement of work that is in the packet is the final approved statement of work from
that part. Can you just explain to the board how long you've been working with? Yeah. You don't have to spend a lot of time on it. I just want them to understand that we have gone through many, many iterations of the statement of work over the last year.
Yeah, over the last year. It was... a lot of things I should say that I probably won't say. through no fault, I believe, of LaWanda in any way, and I don't believe through much fault on our own, this process has been very arduous. Our partners in Washington were there to help, and they helped us a lot on this one. So if it's done, that's the good news. But yeah, I think when I looked at my drafts folder, I was looking back for previous drafts. I think I have 37 working drafts that were traded with FRA over this process. So yeah, it didn't need to be that hard, but
yeah. Justifying existence, wasn't it?
Was that?
Justifying existence.
Yes, it was, I get paid to do this, so I shouldn't complain too
not
much.
You.
Justifying their existence, yes indeed. Yeah, and I mean, look, the FRA is a good partner to work with. And over our careers, Dave and I have done a number of projects with the Federal Railroad Administration, but this process is always far from it's just the nature of the beast.
I just want everyone to understand that we have, that they have worked out all of the kinks, for lack of a better word, through the last year. So everything is defined in the statement of work, and as far as the allocation of the funds and just line by line what is allowed and what is not allowed in the project, that's already been worked out.
Thank you for that.
There are 125 existing highway grade crossings that are in this scope of work. I haven't seen a list of those. I'm not interested in those that need to go. But there is one particular crossing in my county commission district that I would like to know if it's on the list or not, and that's at the end of T.W. Wilson Road. The road ends at the railroad right-of-way, and there's a crossing there. And there's numerous, seven or eight, across the railroad, and this has been a thorn in their side and mine. Is it on there?
It's on page 14.
All right, it's on there. All right, I'm satisfied. You can do as you will.
The fourth part of the agreement is the budget, and specifies that 50% of the funds that come from non-federal sources, which we've discussed a fair amount in this. The fifth part of the document.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking at my presentation, not at yours. So I skipped the schedule. I apologize. Yeah, deliverables and project schedule. Let me jump back up. That's the third attachment. That was the document the county engineer was referencing a little while ago, and it lays out the deadline, or not deadlines, they can't be, but the scheduled anticipated completion of those items. I would say, and I would echo Jason's comments, I think many of those deadlines can be exceeded. I don't want to overpromise here. Deadlines have a way of taking on a life of their own sometimes. But this is a fairly straightforward project. Commissioner, did you have a question?
No.
Okay. The fourth attachment is the budget that I just spoke of. And then, Counselor, this will be near and dear to your heart. Federal laws and regulations, the fifth attachment there. It's a little daunting when you look at it. It lists, I think, something like 40 some odd federal laws which could, may, might apply to this project. They're not very helpful when they put this document together. This is a boilerplate document that they attach to the end of all of their grants. So it is the key things that I think are most important in this, and that I'm certain will apply to this project. Probably one of the most important is what's called Davis-Bacon prevailing wage. I don't know how many of you have had any familiarity with this, but it is a wage rate schedule for all the contractors who will be working on this. It's like an alternative minimum wage to ensure that contractors are paid a rate that's comparable to what their craft and trade would be paid elsewhere. It's a huge bureaucratic machine at the Department of Labor. When our RFP goes out to contractors, they will, probably in, Declaration of War, New York Times font, will have some notice that all the bids have to reflect Davis-Bacon prevailing wage. Because if they don't and they bid it wrong, you've completely blown the budget. Right? So that's probably the most important thing for contractors on this. You can remind Congressman Dunn that both Davis and Bacon were Republicans when they passed that. Interesting tidbit for their piece for you there. The National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, this is protecting waterways, endangered species. Jason's already referenced that that was another part of this process that LaWanda got to observe for about a year, was working the paperwork to verify that there were no additional environmental remediation steps that needed to be taken. Generally, when you do a railroad project within existing rights of way, you're not building new things. We even spoke a little while ago with your engineer about how we're able to even pick up some of the piles out of the water on the bridge and jack it up without ever getting in the water. So it's a fascinating thing. I hope you get to see one of those when it goes in your way. But the key point is very little no environmental disturbance outside the right of way. Freedom of Information Act. So everything we submit, the invoices, the bills, would all be subject to a FOIA request by the public. So there won't be anything bad in there. It's something to keep in mind that people could pull that documentation.
About that.
Yes, sir.
Sure. Chapter 119.
Yes.
Certain statutes.
So there are, Jason alluded to these, and these will be things that I think that will be very helpful to have a professional grant manager on the team to help with. The Transparency and Accountability Act requires reporting of some of these expenditures on web portals that's then publicly accessible. And then the Uniform Administrative Requirements and Cost Principles. Something only an accountant could truly love, a real kind of evil accountant. But the process that you have to go through to report all this stuff, there's a very structured way that all of these have to be submitted. And so having an outside consultant to help us through that process is going to be very important to us. And of course, civil rights and non-discrimination. I think there's about a dozen non-discrimination statutes that would apply to this. So I hope, you know, and again, not all of those laws will apply, but they could. And if there are things in there that cause particular concern, you know, my guess is Mr. Bishop will have a number of additional conversations on that front, just so we understand what we're doing. And then finally, we have already discussed the cooperative agreement fairly extensively here. And this is the agreement that was not attached to the packet that was given you, but that Mr. Bishop and Scott Williams will be negotiating, and that is the agreement that will govern our relationship between the county and the railroad. And again, on that, our key thing there is memorializing the fact that I think probably the most important thing in that is memorializing what the county isn't going to do as much as what it is going to do. And that the financial obligations and responsibilities of this project are squarely on tracks and Georgia Florida Railroad and not on the people of Taylor County. I think in my mind, that's the most important part of that document. And lots of other parts.
I agree.
Yes, sir. Jason, are there any questions about the DOT Taylor County agreement that I just walked through?
I have one thing I'd like to ask of you. When the contractors are here hiring subcontractors, would they try to keep hire as many local people as they could? That's always when somebody comes in out of town to work here, they a lot of times they bring help from out of town. I understand they have to bring their key people, but I appreciate them trying to hire as many local people as possible. And we'd all appreciate that. That was county business. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
So let's talk a little bit about next steps so that we can clarify kind of what the next couple of months look like for everybody here today. So imminently we're expecting that grant agreement from the FRA. Again, that document is the document that governs the grant, and that's expected imminently from them. Execution of the GFRR Taylor County agreement that we've discussed, the completion of the and submission of the project management plan, RFP completion and issuance for the CDI and grants administrator, the completion of that preliminary engineering documents, plan set development, and the FRA review, and then RFP completion issuance for the rail work completion by the contractors, and then final design as well, and then into construction. So generally speaking, that's the set of activities that will need to occur over the coming months, as we have illustrated in our presentation. So with that, Dave, would you like to make some closing remarks?
I think one thing about the execution. I'm sorry to break your stride twice. The execution of the grant agreement, that is an electronically executed document. It's pretty much going to be those five parts that was in my packet. But it will be electronically executed. And Madam Chairwoman, I think that actually the anticipation is that you would be the person executing that. And I think the way that's going to work along it is there's going to be, I believe they will send you an email. And we've got her address, so be on the lookout for something from Federal Railroad Administration. I don't know exactly what that looks like when it comes to you.
Okay, would you copy it also to her?
I think the way the system is set up, I think it does go to her that way. But they will presumably, and we'll keep checking with them, but presumably they will let us know when they've actually done that, because it's kind of the end. So at that point, we'll tell LaWanda and she can tell you. I just don't... Don't go deleting things from the Federal Reserve.
We'll be able to print off a hard copy so that we can, because we'll have to share.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll have to have it in front of the board. Yeah.
So then after the board approves the hard copy, then you can log in and approve the electronic.
I don't know what format it comes in now. I don't know if it's assignable PDF. I don't believe it's a PDF. I think it, I think it's actually like text on a screen, so it probably prints real clunky. But I can ask. I'll inquire.
Does it require a resolution for the chairman to sign on behalf of the board?
I would assume that you would have to have some kind of action by the board for her to execute.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, so I think what he's trying to say is some of our grant agreements, I think our FDOT agreements, require a separate resolution by the Florida County Commissioners giving the board, giving the chairperson the authority to sign. But they're not all like that.
They're not. That has not been on their list, but we have done those in previous grants. I'm not certain if it was a requirement it was always a requirement for our public agency to do it, right? They had to have the authority granted, the signer had to have the authority accepted by the commission, right? So I'm uncertain if our prior grants included that because of that or because the Fed required it, but we can ask that question.
Well, if anyone doesn't have any other questions this evening, I realize we've peppered you with lots of facts and figures, and my head's even spinning, and I'm the one that knows them. I just wanted to conclude by saying one of the reasons we were so anxious to come down and update the commissioners in this workshop is we truly believe after a year and a half that this is imminently getting ready to close. And we look forward to beginning the construction phase. Our principal customer is just as interested in seeing this work done as soon as possible as you are. And because it's nice to have a little bit of fun when you're doing stuff like this too and not just talk about pieces of paper. When the contract has been awarded and when the weather is good, it's fully our intention, Madam Chairperson, to have you and the commissioners come out. We'll do a ceremonial driving of the first spike of the project. Dr. Dunn has already said, just give me the date and time and I'll be there. And we'll have some fun. We'll make a little hoopla out of it, you know, maybe have a little luncheon or something. But I want you all to have something interesting to look forward to this summer as we finally get this closed after so many trips through the mud and along and Melody some too. So thank you.
That would certainly be a nice gesture, and thank you all for being here this evening to go over this in detail like we did and answer any questions that we have. And of course, thank you, Lamar, for all the work that you've done on this too over this past long time.
Melody's worked very hard on this as well. She's been a great partner for this. Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate the work of Representative Dunn. Mm-hmm. Tell him how grateful we are. And come see us.
Yes, ma'am.
And thank y'all again so very much. This needs a lot to take into account. Any other comments or questions from the board?
No comments. Very good presentation.
Thank you.
Well, have a safe trip back to wherever you're going.
Thank you.
Okay, I have been asked to move number six to visit number six next. The board to discuss the ad valorem tax exemption ordinance. Thank you. Do you want to take the lead on this?
Yes, ma'am. I'll be glad to. Let me just say, first of all, that our economic development ad valorem tax exemption is found in Section 70-31 of our Code of Ordinances. And it's also, you know, if it's an ordinance form, it would be Ordinance number 2009-08. That particular ordinance, I will tell you that the one that prepared that, it's me, I prepared it. I personally feel like it's a pretty comprehensive ordinance as a practical matter. If you look at it, under 7035, it talks about what the eligible businesses are. And it just briefly, a business that's establishing 10 or more quality jobs to employ 10 or more full-time employees in Taylor County, which is a manufacturing process or compounds, fabrics, and so forth, or an industrial, or a business establishing 25 or more quality jobs to employ 25 or more full-time employees in the sales factor, or an office space which houses 50 or more full-time employees, and any business located in enterprise zone that first begins operation and closes separation from other businesses. It also provides for expansion of existing business, where if you're going to hire 10 more folks for manufacturers and so forth, or a business establishing 25 or more quality jobs to employ 25 or more in sales factors and then in business. It also has, under 70-30-36, it gives you the definitions of the various words that we use in them. An applicant means any person or firm, a partnership, a corporation that's doing business. The commission is, of course, the Taylor County. The Economic Development Committee means the TCDA, which is the Taylor County Development Authority. Enterprise Zone is what's established in Florida Statutes 290.0065. Improvements means the physical changes made under it. Sales factor means the fraction or the numerator of the total sales that the business do. Quality job is defined in Ordinance 2006-1. The next thing is that's what's got to be able to have the ability to get an exemption. Now, 70-37 are the exemptions established. And so the board established an economic development ad valorem tax exemption. It's a local optional tax incentive for new and expanding businesses, which may be granted or denied by the board. Okay? When you come in, you can say, you know, I just don't think it's a good idea. We're not going to. And the exemption shall not accrue to improvements to real property made by or for the use of new or expanding businesses when such improvements have been on the tax rolls prior to the effective date. That's where we got in trouble one time. So that's what we as a board, or y'all as a board, we got to make sure that we don't, doesn't happen again. The maximum exemption, it defines what the maximum is up to 100% of the assessed value of all the improvements. But the good thing about that is you can do it less than that. You know, that's one thing that the board can determine. And then also it talks about what replacement property is to replace it. It also talks about the time period under which, and it's up for 10 years. You can make it less than 10 years, though. No ad valorem tax exemption shall be granted for land upon which new or expanded businesses are to be located. The sole intent of this article is being to exempt from ad valorem tax and only certain improvements to real property, not the land, but the improvements. In other words, putting a structure on property. And it's only our taxes. Doesn't apply to any United States taxes. It's only applies to us. And one other thing that we've got to remember too, that if you decide to grant it, then we've got to do another ordinance, you know, to grant the specific tax exemption. And then the dates. Any applicant desiring economic development ad valorem tax exemption shall, on or before March the 1st of the year in which the exemption is requested. So got into a little trouble about that. Didn't read that properly. So got to remember that one when it comes up. My suggestion is that your lawyer and y'all have a copy of the ordinance in front of you when it comes in front of you, so you can just sit there and, you know, go 1, 2, 3. If you don't, I learn something new every day of my life. Some of the things I learn are not so hot, but most of the times you learn something every day as we go through life. So that's another thing. And then on the next page of it, it shows that the application, and it shows what they need to do with regard to the application. The information that has to be on the application. And the application that we have, it just follows the statute, follows the ordinance. So there shouldn't be any problem for the business to go ahead and do that. And they're simple questions. They're not, you know, it's not all that complex. If you look at that, it gives a description of the name and location of the new business, or the description of the personal property for which the exemption is asked for, description of the improvements to the real property, what the building would be, and then they want the following information is a number of employees and so forth, and the average wage and all those kind of things that would make it show that it's a good idea for that exemption to be granted. And then 7039 gives the application process. Now this is where, and I will tell you that when I was instructed by the board in 2008 and 2009, it was brought to this board's attention by the development authority. They're the ones that said, we want y'all to do this. Am I not correct?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure I was correct, because, you know, as time passes, we forget. But I remember specifically them standing there. Okay. It says, the Taylor County Development Authority Director or his or her designee shall review the applications within 10 days of submission to determine whether the application has satisfied all the requirements. It's what they asked for. Okay? Once the application is determined to be complete, the director shall schedule a meeting of the TCDA Board of Directors. The meeting shall be held within 30 days of determining the application is complete or assumed thereafter as practical. Okay? Do your job. I mean, that's what this says. And then later than 10 days prior to the Taylor County Development Authority Board of Directors meeting, the TCA director shall prepare in writing a recommendation of the applicant's eligibility for an exemption to prepare an economic impact analysis on analysis of the application. We don't have anybody that has the expertise for that economic application, that economic analysis. I don't. Our administrator's job. Okay, that's the director, because that's whoever they have as director. That's their responsibility.
Excuse me. Mr. Bishop, I think the TCDA director and the board members should have a copy of this.
Yes.
Because some of the stuff we're talking about right here, you know, it's not done that way.
I'll be honest with you. When they came up and started talking about it, it's been a while since we've done it. But I said, you know, something, I need to go back and read what I did. And so that's what I did, y'all, is I went back and read it. And everything almost that they were talking about is in here.
Yes, it is.
It's in here.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I can stop right now if you want me to, or I can go on. Okay. All right. Economic development review. The TCAD board shall review the application and the director's recommendation and the analysis to determine whether the applicant is eligible for exemption, and shall recommend to the commission, that's y'all, approval or denial of the application. And just because they make a recommendation to approve it doesn't mean that you have to approve it, or it doesn't say that you need to deny it. That doesn't mean that y'all got to deny it, but that's just a recommendation. It's the same thing when I recommend somebody to be on some of our boards, correct? Okay? Then they have the property appraiser review. Upon receipt and careful review of the original application, the property appraiser shall report the following information. And that, within 30 days, and that's got to be given to our property appraiser on time also. You know, this shouldn't be doing it backwards. Then it says, any revenue lost to the county for the current fiscal year by virtue of the exemption, you know, that's a listing of what, you know, what revenue is going to be lost as a result of that. And an estimated would be lost during that current fiscal year. And a determination of whether the property for which the exemption is requested is to be incorporated into a new business or expansion. And then final review or adoption by the commission. Upon receipt of all that, then y'all review it. And then you can determine whether you want to do the ordinance and grant the exemption for the individual or the applicant. And it's one thing that's really important too, in 7040, it says precedent non-binding. Let's read over this. Applications for exemption shall be considered by the commission on a case-by-case basis. After consideration by commission of the recommendation of the TCAD Board of Directors and the property appraiser's report, no precedent shall be implied or inferred by the granting or denial of an exemption pursuant to this article. So, and the exemptions are conditional. And this is what our illustrious county administrator has provided, is the annual report that they need to do. And we need to tell them when they come up, the first thing that if I was applying for the exemption, or if I was representing a person that was applying for the exemption, I said, first thing you need to do is you need to read our code. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm going to give you a copy of the code. Mm-hmm. And you follow it, and you got a much better chance of getting it passed if you follow it and do it on time and don't say, oh, in the middle of the year, you know, you got to wait your turn. That's what this is all about. Because, and the answer to, if your constituents say, well, why do you have those timelines? It's because y'all have a budget time, and then you have the time when you spend your budget. It makes sense, you know, and that's about the name of it. And I asked to be on this agenda. I don't very rarely ask to be on the agenda. I asked on the agenda because I wanted y'all to understand where I was coming from. My personal opinion: I don't know that this needs to be amended.
I can't see where it does.
You know,
we just need to
make
sure that folks follow it.
Now, where in here does it say? What does it talk about? Them giving their annual report
on all exemptions are granted.
7041.
Conditional 7041 on the bottom. It says
page 9.
In addition. Okay. The application is conditioned upon the applicant submitting an annual report to the commission evidencing the satisfaction of this condition. The report shall be on a form adopted by the county. And see, we're adopted. You know, we're going to request that you adopt. No, I can't adopt tonight.
We would need to adopt this form.
Yeah.
And I like the form.
So,
did that
answer your question?
It's simple. It's got everything that you need in there to look at.
Yeah.
And
this is already adopted, right? This adopted.
Yeah. Oh, yes, sir. Okay. Yes, it's been
2009. You said
it's been a long time. And the problem and this is just the way of the world. The problem is that the board granted one a long time ago to the potato chip factory, and then nobody else came around for a long time. And everybody forgets that your lawyer included. I knew we had it, but I forgot this. You know, I didn't remember all the specifics of it with regard to that. So just learn by doing. So just remember it. When somebody comes to you and says, you know, I'm going to open up a new business, and I found that, you know, I might be able to get a tax exemption. First thing they need to do is take a look at this ordinance. Mm-hmm. And if they have a question about it, tell them to call the county attorney.
Now, one question I have, is there a formal application form that they fill out?
Yes, sir.
And it's been approved? Or is,
yes, sir.
Where is it located?
Well, now the TCDA has, they developed that form, from what I understand. And they have that application, correct? And then once the application is completed, then it's brought to us to place on the agenda.
It's supposed to go to TCDA, but it doesn't. I'll just talk to us and then we get a chance.
Okay. About this application that they have, mm-hmm. would it be prudent for us to, when a board like that, has a new form or something for us to be able to look at it too and it be approved by us? Mr. Bishop, I'm sorry. Would that be something that you would suggest that we do?
Well, I don't know. You have boards and they're there for a reason. And you've given them the authority to accept the application, and it doesn't come to you until after they've done these particular things. So if you want to verify and take a look at their application and see if it follows the ordinance, yes. Are you following what I'm saying?
Yeah. Has anybody done that?
Well, see, they had applications in the... In the two most recent we had, they filled out the application. The problem was, the real problem is the annual report, not the application, because they filled out the application. Now, some of them may be a little bit sketchy and they don't fill out enough, you know, but they did fill out applications. The two that were that we had, you know, we had one that went through and one that didn't.
Yes. All right, I got a question. On page 6, you list the one for Lance Manufacturing. Well, that was done in 2006. It's for 10 years. It's already expired. It's not going to be listed in this information here.
Right.
It needs to be deleted from this.
Well, it's an ordinance. It's a separate ordinance.
Right. I understand that, but it shouldn't be in this.
I
don't see.
So we would have to repeal the ordinance, and then I would have to send that to Unicode to have the changes made.
Why? Because it's expired.
Maybe
not business
how
long.
Got to check last page.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think the ordinance, Mr. Bishop explained it. It's a good ordinance. The only thing I know is one conflict between the state statute and ours. What we got in trouble with after the fact, the county, with your ordinance says, if you apply before it's put on Bruce's tax roll, you can do that. That's what happened with one. Okay. And it's supposed to have to resolve that and get along and see you an extension, Michael Lynn.
He received an extension, and I actually emailed him this draft annual report to try to help him comply.
That's the announcement. But the only person, only entity that's got that extension name, talking Bruce, is Michael Lynn. The rest of them have expired. Yeah.
No, Prospect. Harry.
That's new, but right. It hadn't really taken effect.
I know, but we have an ordinance.
Yes, it's just there, but right. He says the only one that Bruce knows about and it's in effect is Michael Lynn.
Right.
The others have expired. The question, state statute says you apply before the end of the year, but our local ordinance says as long as you get it here before Bruce puts on tax on them. That way I understand that will need to be cleared up. I got some things. That's what every board wants to do.
I think we have the authority to do it our way.
However you want to. But there's a conflict. That's what got us in trouble. I
That's why we need to read the ordinance, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Me too.
Yeah, okay.
Me too.
But, you know, I think that if when an applicant applies in that form, you may not have seen, I think the form's okay. But the ordinance says that form, it should come to the TCA board, and we vote, send it on to the county. I don't think that's happened in fact. Some of it just goes, but there's some stuff TCA needs to tighten up on this act, and I'm not speaking for TCA, I'm speaking for the citizen, but I think that ordinance is good like it is, with that one exception that kind of calls for people to agree.
Thank you.
Okay, yes. Just for the board's information, I did receive a phone call last week after someone read an article in the paper, and they asked us to consider some type of something within the ordinance that states they must not be delinquent on their taxes in order to be granted an exemption. And I don't know, that's just for the board's consideration.
What do you think about that?
That's probably a pretty good idea.
Pretty good idea.
So when you're considering, you know, adding, giving.
You could amend, you know, if you want, nothing's perfect. And if you, you know, if you want to amend it, of course, I'd like to check the statute too and see if that's appropriate. Yeah. Also.
Okay, so that's good.
Yes. I would want to add to that construction maintenance.
If you need to come forward to state your name and address.
Yes. Swell Weaver, 8th grade. I want to add to what she was stating about the property taxes. I think construction lien should be also, they shouldn't have any construction liens on their property because it's a lien against their property. I mean, it's just another factor.
That makes sense to me. You got any construction liens or any tax?
Well, the process for that actually is, and Conrad, you helped me out. It's been a while since we had one, a few years. But when those liens are filed and they actually come to me, some of them can be transferred to their performance bond, and the bonding company has to pay those liens. So when the project's over with, you probably wouldn't have liens anymore.
If there is a bond.
Well, there should be on these kind of problems, but I don't know what's.
Now, what if somebody that's just putting in, just 5 jobs, you know.
Wouldn't have a performance bond?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of bonds anyway. So hard to collect. They are. But those are good ideas. That's a good idea from you, Sue Ellen, and that's a good idea from whomever called you on the telephone. Or can consider that. You can't tell me to do it tonight, but you can consider it. But
okay. Anything else? I think it's sounding pretty good right now. Okay, so that's.
Well, I appreciate y'all listening to me.
Well, thank you. One other thing that I want to bring up, that we need to discuss at some point in time, while it's on the front burner, I need to bring it up. It's been discussed at the TCBA meetings several times since I've been there, and I think it was brought up again last week during our meeting, and they have discussed that a portion of the new tax money that's brought in by a new business or expanding business or whatever, that a portion of that would be allocated to the TCBA. So,
no.
I feel like I'm just a messenger. Yeah, I'm trying to. But I feel like that it's underfunded, and that this would be a way to, for them to increase their budget.
I don't know whether you can do that that way legally. Now, this is just off the top of my head. you know, you can certainly budget money for them, but I don't know that you can allocate a portion of whatever you collect to them. That would be an auditor's nightmare.
Was there a way that we could find out that, and then when it started up again, we can kind of get that in the bud, if that's the way it is?
Probably. Probably. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, somebody that could answer that question right off the bat would be the guy from Lake City who comes and gives us our audit report.
Richard Powell.
Any questions?
Yes, ma'am. Ursula Miller, Cedar Island. There's a letter on file from the county commission before y'all and from the development authority with them asking Pam Bondi, the state attorney, the same exact scenario you just said. Mm-hmm. Can they take a portion of property tax or income tax, whatever, from a new business? Mm-hmm. They cannot. And Pam Bondi responded in either 3 or 4 pages back to him.
I can't believe I agreed with Pam Bondi on anything. It's public record,
and you can actually Google it, and it'll pull it up.
So that's already been answered.
That's already been answered. Pam Bondi, and she's already said, yeah. Can't do it.
I understand one thing, and I think I'm right. I think Honorable Pam Bundy is correct, but an attorney general's opinion is not the law.
Right. But she quoted several statutes and other East statutes. She gave her opinion of it. And
oh, I agree 100%. You know.
Yeah, it's in the bottom line from her. The gist of it was that is taxpayer funds belongs to the county, and it's up to the county administrators and the board what we do with it in our budget. It's not collected to pay them.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Anybody else? Before we move on, if not, we're going to go back to number 4, the board to discuss solid waste operations. Gary?
Before Gary steps up, I'd like to provide the board with some
a financial, just a very simple financial analysis that we did that looks at the last 10 years of solid waste operations. And what we did was we compared the actual expenditures to the total revenue received. And then we accounted for your personal services, which is all your personnel costs, operations, then we added the tipping fees, so y'all could see that on a separate line, and then rolled up the total operations. We accounted for capital expenditures, and this goes from 2008 to 2018, and then the balance at the bottom is just a working cash balance. This does not take into consideration any cash carry forward or what we have in reserves. This is just to demonstrate to the board, this is what we've got coming in, and this is what we have going out. And I know that the tipping fees have been a point of discussion over the last few years. The two columns on the end, I provided a 10-year average, and then compared 2008 to 2018, increase or decrease. And that's just to demonstrate just how the expenditures go up and down. So if you look at the last column, you'll see that comparing 2008 to 2018, we've had an increase in our personnel cost of $125,000. Our operations are decreased by almost $30,000. And that tells me that we just continue to cut our operations as far as we can. Operations have been continually, that budget has been decreased throughout the years to accommodate our budget constraints. The tipping fees are actually a little lower, and this is just comparing the 2 years. Than they were in 2008. And this isn't what's budgeted, this is what's expended. And then you see our the total operations, the total for those two line items is down $35,000. Our capital expenditures fluctuate through the years, but you can see over the last few years, if you go all the way back to 2015, we have not had very large capital expenditures. Those are expenditures for our containers, for our compactors, for our heavy equipment. You can see how low that is. And then if you look at the total expenditures, if you compare 2008 to 2018, the increase is $121,000, which is not very much over a 10-year period. So the last row, just like I say, it shows your cash balance. The revenue hasn't changed very much over 10 years. I would say that's probably due to, we don't have a big shift in population, so there's not a big increase in our assessments. Yes, sir.
Can I stop in a minute? Last year, I guess, under a prior administrator, I was led to believe that our tipping fees had increased significantly because maybe a lot of city folks were putting garbage in, and we went into a great effort to give out cars and all that. This doesn't.
It doesn't demonstrate that.
To me.
Well,
our tipping fees are fairly consistent.
Except in 2017. And so if you go back to, say, 2014,
yeah.
And then 2015, they're up a little bit. 2016, they're up. 2017, they're up to $333,000. But if you think about it, we had storms that year. And yeah. That always generates...
That's a spike because of storm.
I would assume.
Yeah.
And when we spend money that we can obtain FEMA reimbursement, that's not in this budget. So that's in a separate budget. So that would not be reflected in this budget. So it's not something that we would have received reimbursement for. I do see that in 2018, our tipping fees were down. Now, that's the year that we did institute the identification of the cards and the stickers. Mm-hmm. And I do think I do believe that had a positive effect. Yeah. But that's something that we have to continually, you know, stay on top of. And I think that the cards are easily reproduced. I don't know that we completely stopped traffic of people who are not paying the assessment.
You will never stop.
Yes, sir.
100%.
How do they get by, if you're supposed to show a car, how do they get by not showing a car?
I just think that as people become familiar to the rural off-site attendants, that, or if they're very busy, that it's possible that they may not be as diligent, or they become familiar with someone. Now, and I'm not saying we're not asking for cars.
Go ahead.
I don't know that. I think when we first rolled out the program, that you know we were very diligent, and I know that roll off site attendants are asking to see the cards because I receive complaints. People you know don't like it because they feel like
mm-hmm.
I mean they still don't like it. I think the problem may be that people receive multiple cards and they share them. Or they're easily reproduced. I don't necessarily think we're not asking to see the cards. But I don't know that that's a fail-proof system. I think it helped. But I don't think it, you know, I just think it's difficult to make it fail-safe. So before Gary comes to talk to us, I just wanted to take the opportunity to demonstrate with some numbers that if you compare our budget in 2008 to our budget in 2018, our budget is larger, but we have an increase in our personal services. And if you just compare the two columns, I think you'll see that we have decreased operations. We're not buying capital. And that our personal services continue will go up because there's just a general increase in those line items.
On capital expenditures, do we use any 1 cent money to buy some capital?
This is the first year that our 1 cent funding has been in the budget, I believe, and...
I mean, I don't see any capital expenditures here enough.
Sorry.
Because we maybe bought any new trucks or anything.
I believe it's been quite a while. If you look at the capital expenditure line item,
well, in 2009, we might have bought something.
And then in 2014, did we buy containers that year? Or
which year was it?
2014.
Yeah, we may have purchased some then.
Right.
Hadn't started 14 or 15.
Yeah.
Picking up about 10 years.
What I gather from this, and Gary, you correct me if I'm wrong, is solid waste is just holding on.
I think that's a fair statement.
That's a fair statement. I mean, we don't have a lot of reserve there, and you can't continue like releasing trucks. That's going to be an expenditure here. We're going to have to do something to enhance some revenue, I think, for solid waste. And I thought about it. We charge $140 solid waste a second. And just by resolution, the board can increase that up to $154, which would be a 10%. Now, I'm not willing to stick my neck out and say I can support that until we deal with this solid waste one-third assessment for these RVs. Now, if you've got an RV at the beach, and the RV's going to be I don't generate much garbage, but Commissioner Moody would point out there's some people live there full time in some of these RVs.
And every RV's got one kitchen, and every house in Perry's got one kitchen, and they're going to go to
the and they need to pay more than a third. It's an RV. Pay the 120, and then maybe we wouldn't have to go up. Anyway, Gary, what do you think?
I think it's something to look at to generate some more revenue. I think we're going to have to look internally and make it work.
Gary, come on out. Now, Gary has a plan that he, before we go down that road, I just wanted to demonstrate why we all get anxious when we discuss increasing our expenditures, because we know how tight the budget is and, you know, how it's looked through the years. So Gary has something that he wanted to show y'all and give him
that. And what we did last time I was here, you guys asked me for some numbers on past, what we generated and stuff, and the ordinance, you know, as far as paying at the roll-off side. And this is just a sample kind of... just an example of what we're looking at. Now, the figures on the front page is just something John Singer did in 2001 when he put this out with the ordinance and everything. Stating exactly, you know, what the board decided to go, what direction. They had assessment fee, but they also were paying at the roll-off sites, far as construction debris and stuff. The second page is kind of a sample, if it's in the right order, the sample of what we would give to the roll-off attendants if we started charging. This is just an example, something to look at. What they do is check by the box and basically look at it, what size of the trailer and the cost of it to generate. And it's just a rough graph, just looking at it. But if you look at the third page, this is the revenue, kind of a base on cubic yards that we lost last year, total. And if you go down, it's C&D, and it tells, we took out all the containers, and we kind of took out a couple hundred, I think it's 200 tons on the side, and basically it was $148,000 on C&D that we paid besides household garbage. And that's kind of rough. It could be a little more, it could be a little less. because we don't have scale, so we're guesstimating by the cubic yard. Now, on the yard debris, we're pretty close on it, because we run the cubic yards on it, and the container, but it could be up and down, and it looked around 78,000. And we don't charge for the tires or the batteries or any of that. They just bring them in. There's a limit on how many they can bring, but they could come, you know, 3 or 4 times a week, and we absorb that cost too. And just roughly, it's around $227,000 that we lost last year by not charging at the roll-off sites, besides household debris. The fourth page, if you look at it, what we're trying to do, and it's just a rough graph, exactly what we're looking at, and the assessment we all know is to cover household garbage. But what this does, and the charger will be levied to all the customers, resident and non-resident and commercial businesses. It just holds the person that's bringing the waste accountable for paying for it, basically, is the way I set this up. And what we could do is, like, on that copy, when they come in with a load, we check off, there's 3 copies, we get one, they get one, and anybody, if we can figure out the matrix of how to make it where we wouldn't overload her, and we would pick them up daily the next day, maybe do a master sheet, break them down and everything, where she could just do the, you know, collecting or something like that. And like I say, this is just something for you guys to look at, but there's a lot. I think the whole gist of it is we could gain some cash flow this way. It's a little more work on our end, but if it would help, where we could get equipment and fencing and stuff like that.
Yeah, I know there's people in the audience that want to talk, and just as soon as the board, you know, finishes our discussion with him, then I'll open the floor for y'all to, you know, y'all can talk in. On the batteries and the tires, do other counties charge an additional?
Some do, yeah, some do.
Do you have an idea?
I could check and see. The ones I talked to, they charge on. This is where I got a lot of the information, like Live Oak, mm-hmm. Alachua, and stuff like that. And they have scales there, and they basically, they don't take anything but household debris, and they charge for yard debris, construction debris. That's what I think Madison's kind of, they kind of mimic Madison's plan there.
Mm-hmm. You send those tires also?
No, I do not.
Well, also tires.
Mm-hmm. They do.
Mm-hmm. And there's I think it's $125 a ton.
Mm-hmm. It is.
That also pays right. For somebody to come and pick up the tires. Mm-hmm. I think we have a supply of semi-container with the tires we put in.
Right.
Until he waits next month and comes and gets all of it. And then he'll pick up that semi and drop off the vehicle. But we're paying a rental fee on that. So to dispose of tires is not a cheap proposition.
It is not, and I think the company Barnes, I have to look at this year's prices. We used a company that was there when they came in, and they may be, I think, also may be at $3, and they may be at $2.50 or something like that.
Not much difference.
But also it does, once in a while somebody will throw one in a container, and I'll sell a flag me off the charger for
it. Yeah, we charge it back.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a load.
And basically all this is just an overview so you guys can look at this. I don't know, you know, if you guys want to go up on assessment or look at this or what, but it gives you an idea that maybe we could generate a little cash flow.
All right. Now let me, if I may.
Go ahead.
We had a discussion at a prior workshop about yard debris, mm-hmm. limbs. And if I recall, you said maybe we can put a container and have the attendant be vigilant and make sure nothing went in there except limbs or yard leaves, and we could transport that out to the incinerator. That would keep us from having to pay the tipping fee at also for the limbs, which would be a slight savings.
And that's what we're doing now at the roll-off site. You're talking about for a contractor or just in
general? Just right.
for assistance.
Well, you're saying that they've got, somebody threw some extra stuff in there, and...
Well, if it's contaminated, then you can't use it. Right. I have to consider it. You're going to have to take it to us.
And I could check. I think they're doing a lot better job. We school them a little bit better, and I think we're doing a lot better job. Last year, we probably pulled in at the incinerator, just an average for them. If you did an average, probably 35 truckloads a month to the burn site. And I don't know how many dollars sell it, it may be two or three. What happens is, with our roll-off sites not being really chain link fenced up, when they come there at night,
they mix it up.
They mix it into little lin bins and stuff like that. They just throw it from one container into the other looking for drugs and everything. And the sheriff's department, I guess he's gone. I was going to bring this up in the last 3 weeks. I don't know how many people they arrested, but if I was guessing, they were from 5 to 10 there at the road. He told me out there that they have been catching people left and right inside there, and they've got them for burglary and stuff like that.
Now, what you were saying, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I am, what you're asking is everybody, not just a contractor, but anybody that took limbs and all to the roll-on, that would go to the incinerator, right? Not just contractors, but any...
Well, it does now. But exactly. What happens is, if you got a limb bin here and a class three here side by side, at night, it happens all the time. They'll come in and they'll dig through that class three and throw it in the other container.
You mean it in truth?
Yes, they will. And once in a while, we get somebody that comes in with a load of debris, yard debris, but we don't know underneath that he's got treated two befores or something like that.
You can't burn that.
You're right.
And yeah. Now here's where I'm coming from. All of us hold elected positions and we answer to these citizens. We've been taking C&D, you know, that's old concrete box and one of my refrigerators and all that junk, as a service to the citizens. And we also take yard debris. Now to stop that, so you can't do this anymore, it's going to be very, very, very unpopular.
I agree 100%.
I mean, our call is going to ring out the door. What do you want me to do with this stuff? Old piece of fence wire or whatever I need to get rid of. And if you don't have somewhere for the citizens to carry that stuff, it's going to wind up in the woods or on the side of the road somewhere.
Well,
and it might be more powerful to increase the fee and generate more revenue that way and continue to provide the service for the citizens. I bet some people tell me, don't take any limbs at the roll-off sites. If you've got limbs that you want to dispose of, you take them down here to Hampton Springs and calculate the fee. This is $18 worth of limbs. Down there, well, that won't work. I mean, who's going to haul a load of limbs from Steenhatchee?
Oh, I agree.
You agree? And or from Cedar Island, Blue Creek. Or in continue for that matter, it's too far. Now, if you start cutting the services, the people are going to complain. And they're some relatively tameless ways to generate a little more revenue and then tighten up on the limits. Think about what it would cost our citizens if we said you can't put anything at C&D out here at our roll-off sites. If you need C&D, call Waste Pro and get you a $500 dumpster and fill it up.
Well, what I was looking at, this is kind of what I was facing on. We got people coming in with multiple loads. And I don't think it's fair to the county for them to dump 10 loads of house debris out at one time.
Tell us how to stop that.
If you charge them coming in the gate, each roll-off site.
All right, now, once you start charging it, the archers round on the roll-off sites collecting money.
Well, no, sir, we would use an invoicing system.
We would do the invoice system where they don't touch the money.
Okay. And Ms. Annabelle, you're equipped to do all the send out the bill.
Well, that's the matter, sir. So.
I just saw this. How many years was it all inside of our auditors for collecting money at their various locations? Yeah. And that's why this has been placed. I collect the rental control, I do your program fees, so we could work this out.
Okay.
The problem is when they don't pay, after 30 days.
But that's what we have to ask Conrad exactly. We looked at this thing, and this is just a rough draft, just an idea, that the residents still could bring in. Now, me personally, I don't bring in limbs enough in my house, because I'm gonna probably burn mine.
I burn mine.
I don't hold a lot of, once in a while I haul off a couch or a chair or mattress, but I think we do have a lot of people abusing that when they tear down a house, and who's ever bringing in the waste is generating, not the household waste, just the C&D or whatever, class three, they have to pay for that coming in, where we don't.
All right, if the clerk can take on the responsibility of the invoicing and the billing.
They get invoice.
Yeah, we get invoice.
Yeah, well, they get an invoice there, right. And you get it, and then the people are going to have to come up and pay. Right. Then you've got to have staff to determine who's paid and that's paid.
We'll do some of it. We got one outstanding boat master right now.
And we did that. We did it for 6 months for animated. We collected them, and when I was down there running it, we collected them. We did a master sheet, and we turned them in, I think, every day, roughly. And I don't think we had any glitches on it. And it's similar. There's a lot more volume here, but it's just an idea for you to look at. I mean,
but I think you are to add to this refrigerator, stoves, mm-hmm. washer, and dryer as another item there, because...
And like I say, open the suggestion. Right. You know, this is just for something for you guys to look at.
Just put appliances. I had a call a gentleman from Steve Hatching, who was a businessman. He's called me several times lately. He called today, and he was not going to be able to be here tonight. But he explained again the problem that they have down there. There are lots of people down there, lots of construction, new construction, and rehabilitation of homes and everything, and they're quite concerned down there about what they're going to do with I guess it's called C&D when you're the contractors. So
they're supposed to rent a dumpster. Contractors supposed to have a dumpster sitting in that yard when they tear a house down and remodel one and put it in.
So if you're a citizen and you're doing, you and your children or grandchildren are doing it yourself, then they're expected to rent a $500 dumpster to tear down a...
Well, and right now, if they got a car and they pull in there and their truck isn't identified as a contractor, they can bring multiple loads in. Mm-hmm. But with the assessment, it was designed for household trash only. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With this thing you're looking at, they would have to pay to do that, mm-hmm. just like anybody else. It keeps everybody honest. If the city came in or a contractor or whatever, they pay the same amount coming in.
Well, he said they would, you know, be glad to pay it. They just want to.
I think this system would solve that problem.
Yeah.
It's solved all that. We can manage it.
Scrap lumber, mm-hmm. do it yourself. Get down there, and that's $14. Or 12, small pickup load, $12.
Mm-hmm. And I talked to Madison, and I asked him, I said, how strict are you guys? They said that people pull up there and got six people before, you know, simple stuff, you just go ahead and let them dump. But when they bring in the truck loads and the trailer loads, that's where it gets. What happens is, you know, Greenville ain't open through the weekend. And people on the weekend, of course, are doing more cleanup, weather fine. We clear out all the containers empty. A lot of times by Saturday afternoon, we'll have Steam Hatchet, there'll be four or five class three slam full. Well, we have a few cans we can swap out, but we can't haul any loads to Greenville. And that limits, we give out a room. That's
so what happens then if somebody comes with it?
And tell them come back Monday.
Well, we try to accommodate. We work a lot of Sundays just trying to pull cans from other sides and move them out. And that's what we're up against. I think it would keep everybody honest and everything. Like when they did go to tear down the house, and you got the guy pulling in there 5-10 loads a day, he would go get a container, you know.
Rather than pay multiple $12, they keep
just coming in.
I think this is working.
It's just something to look at, just something you guys look at.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
This invoice system, would the people who wanted to jump here use their card, or would you allow somebody set up in the city to have it approved.
I think you could look at it either way. If you wanted to get that revenue from the city, that would give them an option to come out there. If we could maintain pulling this stuff, you know, truck wise and all that, it's going to come down. The yard waste, a lot of people start burning versus bringing it in, I'm sure. And so that gives you more room for contractors out there, Hamptons. I mean,
now if we take city council and refrigerators and CD and crud,
we're going to have to carry that off. So, mm-hmm. And the county's going to be paying the tipping fee for the city residents. I don't know if we need to go there now.
Well, and I just said it's just an option.
That won't work.
I don't want to go there. They need to build their own truck.
They need to build their own truck. They haul it, not us haul it.
And why I'm saying this is because we're getting city people right now and we can't control them. You know, they're coming in.
If there are a few that come by and we can't control those few, they got to pay. Mm-hmm. But to publicly say, we're
going they come up with a car. There's people in the city, like, there's people that probably live in the county, got multiple cars, like she said, and give them somebody in the city.
But there's people that live in the city
that got county cars.
Absolutely. I do too. Yes, so, I do.
How they can eliminate that is have a sticker on it. If you had a place in the county and you had a place in the city and you had a sticker on the truck that you got from the county, you know, you could haul that stuff there.
You can't pass the sticker on it.
Well, you know, if you put the sticker on one, like I'm put a sticker, like I got on my truck, I got the county dump sticker on my one. But now, if I could take them cars, I could give them anybody that go, you know, tear down a house and use their cars.
Next time we issue, let's don't give out cars. Give out just stickers.
Well, I got an idea, and it might not work, but then, Gary, if you had one side, like the Coffin Cemetery side, that's the only place they could carry limb, that's the only place they could carry batteries, and they could carry asphalt, and they could carry tire.
Absolutely.
And you had somebody on site to take their money when they come. And it wouldn't have to put the burden on anybody. You could pay for one person to run out and feed that money box when they come in.
When Ted was here, I gave him that. I showed him we could do one in the north end, one in the south end, and one in the town.
That's
what I thought would be the best way to set it up too.
You'd get the money, you wouldn't have to burden sending paperwork and her having to worry with it, people not paying. But a lot of them ain't going to pay if you just send them a bill.
This is just an idea.
You can upgrade a one side or two sides to take it and have somebody there when it opens up. They expect the load, make sure it's nothing but limb, and then you pay me the $6 or $8 or whatever, and it'd be done with it.
And like I said, the catalyst of it, you know, last year in revenue, if we were charging, we would have maybe gained $225,000.
And then go to nothing but the sticker. That's cost a lot of that passing cars around. And we need to really stress the point to the city to go ahead and step up to the plate and build them a roll-off site for their people and that'll be over with for part of that.
Okay, I want to go back to Steve Hatcher one more time because I've dealt with some persons. So if we're limited to what we can take down there.
I don't think you're going to limit. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
In terms of space, you know, if you've had a lot of activity on Saturday and they pull up with another load and there's nowhere to put it and they've already hired somebody, loaded it on the trailer or the truck. What can we do about it?
Well, right now, I ordered some more cans. We had some CIP, so we've got some more cans coming. We haven't run into that. The only time I know, one night, late, 4 o'clock, he called me and said, Gary, I'm slam full. I said, I'll tell you what you do. I said, how much is in the metal can? He says, one fridge. I said, let him dump it in, and that was this Sunday. I said, just fill up the metal can. We didn't lose the... you know, $1.50 by doing that. And that's where worst case scenario, if it happened really bad, they could maybe have to drive down to Blue Springs is the worst thing. But with the new cans, we can swap out. We're going to get, I think, 7 and 3 coming in. So it's 10.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you the name of this person. And maybe you and Gary, y'all can call him and talk to him. He's been very nice, but he's...
And he's a contractor?
Oh, I'll get you
his
name.
No, I know who it is.
Have I talked to him? Okay.
And just, you know, just talk with him and let him explain things to me, and then you can help him. But, you know, if I live at Steve Hatchie, I wouldn't want to drive all the way to the Springs. The same thing if I lived at the beach. I would hate to have to drive to Steve Hatchie if I've got several loads that day. That's a lot.
That is a lot. And honestly, Steve Hatchie generates a lot. They really do.
He said they do.
They do. They generate a lot, and I don't see anything but getting more. You know, they're growing out. Yeah, they're growing out.
They're growing.
Ursula can.
Okay, I promise to. Okay, Ursula, you want to come forward?
Yeah. I talked to you all about this a year ago when we were in a budget crisis, and I brought the numbers. You can contact our county tax collector. And by not charging everybody the same fee, we are leaving over $200,000 on the table. Mm-hmm. Right there in that man could operate on it. He's running a deficit for years. It's not right that this person pays $40, $43, and this one pays $140. And it's not just the RVs. If you own a home and you only come down here part-time, they still charge you $140. And if you're on an RV, they charge you $43. Do the math. At full bulk, at $140, that's $11 and change a month. There is no place in this country that you can pay that amount of money and have trash service like they do here.
That's true.
I also know that a lot of the out-of-towners, out-of-staters, bring in the tires and stuff that they cannot dispose of in their dumps, and they bring them down here because the county will take it. And then they're still paying $43, which is $3 and change a month.
Right. I'm all for it.
Me too.
But you were opposed to Atlanta coming to talk to you, and now you're rolling around. But this man needs money to operate.
Yeah.
And if we do not take our baby steps to improve this county, it's never going to happen. What's fair for you to pay and what's fair for you to pay should be the same things and the same services.
Now, we've got some people that say, oh, I've got hunting camps, and those people come down during the hunting season, and it's not fair for me to pay $140 a year when, you know.
Now, here's the solution to that. If you don't want to do that, and if you have four or more campers in your hunt camp, you're under Florida statutes, you're considered a camp lot. Therefore, you can get a dumpster and come in and rent that dumpster just for the 2 months or 6 months or however long that your people's going to be there, because I know they're not there 12 months out of the year. And then you don't have to worry about the city, the county dump roll-off sites. That's an option for those people.
I think qualifies the RV park. You got to have eight.
Common State, they're going to want you to pay that 12% on the
park.
Well, let me give you a different scenario. I got three pieces of property.
Mm-hmm.
One at the beach. I stayed 1 week down there last year. I paid $140.
Yes, ma'am.
I paid $140 at my house, and none of us rent. Then I have a hunting camp that had a mobile home, and we pay the camp fee for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm paying $240 plus the $46.
Okay.
We dispose of garbage down at the beach 1 week.
Okay. Well, that, in essence, is the cost of ownership.
I understand that.
There's three different scenarios on the cost of ownership, and the second scenario is operating cost, and that's part of your operating cost, just as many other people in America more than one property. I'm not trying to offend you.
Well, you are offending you because I can't be at one place at one time.
You're not the only one that's now like this.
That's why this board went that route before. Now, I know there's probably some abusing that
a lot,
but all you got to do is call the tax collector and tell him that this one would stay in here all year.
And I've heard that before from y'all, and you say call the tax collector, and then if the tax collector starts on this end of the district, by the time he rides down to the other end of the district checking to see who's full-time, who's part-time, and all that, he can turn around the next day and drive that same one out, and the scenario will change. There's actually people on the tax roll that have not paid their taxes that are still able to roll off on go to the roll-off sites.
Yeah.
There are part-timers that have no objection whatsoever that have their main residence in another area or in another state
that are all about it. You've got one sitting right there. Georgia people don't care. We want a beautiful place to come to. We want to have that facility open. We want them to be able to operate and for their people to be paid a decent wage. That's how they think. It's not about it's not about one person. And I'm not trying to, again, I'm not trying to offend you.
Well, one of the things is charging people who use it. If you care, just like Kim said, if you're a photo boat or something, you pay for the photo. The 140 was designed for household garbage.
Exactly.
Not all this other stuff.
There are campers that come down there during scout season that generate more trash in that short period of time than my husband and I do all year long.
But the thing about it is, what kind of economic benefit is this Taylor County for all those people to come down? They go to the stores, they go to the gas stations, and all this kind of stuff.
They spend money.
They spend a lot of money.
Yes, they do. And they don't mind paying the extra of what the regular residents there. He has a part-time home. He lives in Georgia. He pays $140. How much trash do you think he generates?
Well, it's just like me at the beach. 1 week, I paid $140 for
that. Mr. Cooper, do you mind paying
$140? Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, my situation, I'll check.
I did a poll on
the five properties. I paid 5 times $140.
And I understand that as well.
And I don't live with
it. I did a poll online and asking, I gave a subject line of what was in the newspaper, and the majority want to change, charge the same amount to all county property owners, $140 a year, majority.
While we're going in the hole, as Anna May said a while ago, that 140 is for your garbage out of your kitchen only.
Absolutely, and I agree with that. In addition to that, when you have the contractors and all that, you can sell a little credit card type thing where they come in and scan it, and then you'll know how many times they've run through that thing in a week.
That's right.
I can't handle another sticker on the car. I've got re-entry stickers, fishing stickers, boat passes, and I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to be able to scan the windows.
I understand. But if the roll-off side, if they wouldn't take nothing but household garbage and then charge for all the other stuff.
And like you said, if that's what it's designed for, household garbage.
We
pay $140 a year, that'll get that man above water, and then institute something a little further on down the line after we think about it. A credit card, credit card type thing, scan it, and then you'll know if your neighbor's taking 27 loads of stuff down there in one week on a household pass.
That's exactly right. And that would work.
Then she doesn't have to have the staff and the paperwork.
Exactly. She doesn't need more than she do it.
Her plate's full. Now and then some.
Her plate's full. And she'll bow to that. I've been in up there and seen that busy as they can be. They don't need no more. And Gary could actually set up a site to charge the money and have somebody there to take it.
See, that's going to run into a thing too. I'm going to have to have someone run down there and pick up that money and account for it every day.
That's an audit issue. Before we go any further than that, that's why we had to stop it before.
It has to be something that's billed in advance and paid.
Well, we got into an issue before with the auditor taking cash at these sites, which is why we stopped it.
Correct.
And from what I recall, we stopped taking cash. The assessment was raised to the 140, I believe. But over the years, I think everything's been diluted to where we just take everything people bring and then we don't want it in the woods, we don't want it, you know, at the end of roads, we don't want it on the right of way. So it just seems the lesser of the evils just to take it, and now we're where we are.
Well, and we've been real lax about, like you're saying, we've been lax and we took all this stuff, and now look where we are. Look where we have been for the last few years with not having enough of revenue to operate the way we should. So it's time that we've got to make these changes. You know, it means that everybody that owns property pays $140. And even $140 is not that much money.
It's $11 a month. $11 a month.
Yeah, it's not a lot of money. So if you own 5 properties, then that's
$55. It costs more than that to have trash service in a town.
Let me make a point here now. Gary needs about $207,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not for
charging the $140,000 and then making everybody pay for the limbs and the C and D and generating $600,000. Let's don't collect any more money from our citizens than we need to make this thing run.
I agree to a certain extent, but the off-the-wall things like the refrigerators and things like that, make them buy a pass. It could be an annual pass, or it could be a one-time
pass. You know, it's a $300,000, we make money on that.
Yeah.
I mean, start out with 140, everybody across the board, and see what he can
see
do.
See what happens, and then there's
the rest of the and then you're not creating more labor for her department, her, and everybody else.
At least it's a baby step toward
absolutely. This problem. And that takes that financial burden off the county as well, trying to cut here to pay here and rob Peter to pay Paul.
And we could look at that for a year and see at the end of the year where we
can come back and see what
if he's
able to float.
If we need to do something different, we can. I appreciate your input.
And another thing that's been told me before I leave, the loan service people, they say that they are required to buy a city license, which I'm all about that, or a county license, I'm sorry, but they cannot roll off, go to the roll-off sites here. They have to take it to Dixie County. Am I correct on that?
We don't let any contractors in. It's stated on coming in. No contract.
See, that's something that you could sell them an annual pass at X amount of dollars. And if you put the little scanner in there.
And they'd probably rather do that than to travel all the way across city.
Absolutely. I mean, we're required of them, we require them to buy a business license, but you're not allowed to do business here and dump your trash.
That's a good point. What do you think, Gary?
Well, what happens, when you start bringing in contractors, and this is where we're at here, and if it's let's say limbs. Right now we're taking 35 loads a month, and you know we're tied on trucks and stuff like that. If you increase anything, you may have to hire another truck or a driver. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And we got to figure this out. If what we're trying to do to roll off sites, because my roll-off attendants call me every day. Hey Gary, I've got a guy that's coming here 5 times. Well, I don't know what to tell him how many loads this guy can bring. Like, good example, he can come in, truck drive a can, pull a can, drive clear to Perry to dump it. By the time he comes back, that can he put there is already full. It's just nonstop. To keep up with the pace we're at is pretty painful because you can't control the volume.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to let someone else speak.
Sue Ellen has a schedule from Citrus County.
Okay, well, let me let this gentleman, he had his hand up, and then Sue Ellen, you'll be next.
I'm Trump.
Go ahead.
I'm Travis McCoy. I'm a Perry City resident. I got an idea for you that came to my mind. I know you can't do countywide waste collection. I know we looked at that a number of times. But Steen Hatchie is part of the consideration. And it's a heavy population center. My guess, and of course I have one of the numbers, is look at doing curbside in only Steen Hatchie as an option. I think you'll find that has some economic benefits. The second comment, that was from me personally, from the company I worked for, Four Rivers Williamtown Company. Is just keep in mind balancing those charges to what it pushes. Every time we do something to a roll-off site or we do something on charges or whatever, quite frankly, we're the ones cleaning it up.
That's exactly right.
We haul numerous loads without any compensation of sandy, roofing shingles, limbs, trees, and we catch somebody occasionally. But getting the state's attorney to do anything in this county is impossible. So we have been able to get some restitution from individuals to not pursue. But just keep that in mind if you would, please. I don't want your comments.
That's a good point.
Yes.
Thank
you.
So, I contacted several counties within Central Florida because that's where primarily I'm from. And I'm actually going to give you this as well. Everybody had the same ideas, and I know there's the issue of the $140 with everybody paying with so many, you know, properties. And Citrus County, they do by vehicle. They do annual for household trash is only 8 30-gallon containers per week of the household garbage. I mean, their county is bigger than ours. I mean, if we're generating that much trash, they need to calm down. And the only way to do that is to, you know, bring down the how many bags of trash you have versus bringing all the trash in. Because we live at beach. I've seen it myself. They come from Georgia, Alabama, Kentucky with trailers full of trash. And sometimes if they're staying here for a week, they'll bring it every day for a week so that you don't notice that they're bringing it from up there.
Because they have a pass down here.
Yeah. So going by vehicle will eliminate the $140 on property. So you'll buy vehicle, everybody, I mean, this is their schedule for Citrus County. And they have pass orders for senior citizens, 62 and older, gives you like, if you pay annually October through December 31st, it's $68 per vehicle. That right there eliminates people from changing their passes to everybody and whatnot.
Now the truck, how many garbage bags of garbage they put in a week?
Because they're attendant count, but I contacted the director.
And then he chopped down Travis McCoy, he brought in 6 bags.
Yep.
And then he shows up next week, you over the limit one.
They do 8 bags container per week of household garbage and yard waste. If you have yard waste and a garbage bag, they make you pull it out.
You only get a limit.
Only get a limit.
That we don't have a lot of trash in the woods if we get there.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have trash regardless, so we have to figure out which way to go. Do we do 140 to everybody, or do we do it by vehicle?
Yeah, I would not be in favor of the vehicle.
So, I mean, but
140 to everybody, that's all.
But you also have to think about the individuals that aren't paying taxes.
People paying more for Netflix and they all garbage service. $11 and something a month. I mean, they pay for the cell phone and Netflix and everything else a lot more than they pay
for. They pay for all that, so they pay the back company taxes too.
A lot more than they pay for the garbage. And they got to haul the garbage off. They can't keep it at home.
So, I mean, like on Yates Creek, they throw it out there in the woods. And when we see them, we take it back to them. I mean, don't be throwing it out there.
Y'all figure it out.
Yeah. And Mark, at the last school meeting, I talked about the 140th
thing.
I
did
that to him.
Yeah.
I lived in the 140th. He said he saw the statistics when he come back and they said he didn't know they're all county statistics. So what happened in that, every 7 years it drops off. You don't have to do that.
No, I have to.
No.
But
it's a lien up to 7 years. So if the person dies and they probate the estate, they have to pay the years it's still there. But every 7th year, that $140 drops off.
Now if you've got a tax bill, and then you've got, in addition to that, $140 assessment, you can't go down there and say, I want to pay all the tax bill except this $140. They will allow you to
do that. But the thing is that you got people that's got a piece of property that's paying $25,000 and it's all exempt. And the only thing on their tax bill is the $140. And so they say, well, I ain't paying it. It becomes a lien on the property up to 7 years, and that 7th year starts dropping off every time.
So Mark was in there, I mean,
yes, he comes on me. They're all county certificates.
All right. Well, this is some good discussion.
The reason they're showing up so many tires down there is because if you buy your tires online right now, you get free shipping, and you can save $30 a tire buying your tires online. And they change them in home, and they carry that one. If you buy them at Yardbird, you got to pay $3 for the disposal fee on every tire that you buy there. They add that to your bill.
Some of the batteries you can get.
So what we're doing, they buy them tires online, they take them, change them themselves, and they bring them down our dump site for nothing and throw them out.
So is it the board's wishes? I know we can't vote tonight, but are we looking at making everybody pay the $140 and then just continue to operate the way we've been operating, or?
I don't want to keep operating like we're operating because we're going in the hole.
I'm saying if we made everybody pay the $140, that would not be fixing.
I think if we increase the $140, if you guys think that's the route to go, there's revenue there. But I still don't think we control it with the contractors and the citizens, city and all that from coming in. Now, Travis brought up good, you know, about dumping in the woods and everything. I think that we have to step up with the sheriff's department. And when they catch somebody, I think it's state law, literally, in it. Just write them a ticket where you don't have to go to this state attorney or whatever. It's just like a citation. I don't know anything about it.
Well, when they issue a ticket, if the weight of the garbage is under 50 pounds, it's an infraction. If it's over 50, then it's
okay. Thanks so
much. Mm-hmm. Now, if you find trash on the side of the road that has a mailing address,
we call the sheriff's office.
We call the sheriff.
On that individual, yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. And I make a habit of doing that, and I've even, like, a couple weeks ago, we found some. They dropped the whole truckload, and the Shady Grove people were picking it up when I got there. It was whole pickup load. I stopped them. I said, "Hold on, let me call the sheriff." They came right out. In fact, it was Gunner right there that was there first night, and he went to their house. But I go ahead, my son.
We got a gentleman right here.
I was going to say that y'all want to
see
it.
He needs to speak, and he's got a picture on his phone there of a house at the beach of four campers sitting in the yard.
You come forward and talk to us. You sat here all night. I want to hear from you.
I saw it on the drive Sunday.
Come on. Yeah.
I just came to listen.
I'm just speaking about Cedar Island. Keith and I hardly ever go over there. We don't have a marina anymore, no restaurant. I don't have really any reason to go back to Keith. But over to Cedar Island, we've got, and it's getting more numerous and more numerous, you've got three trailers on one lot, and it's more than bringing them in, and you've got two here. I think every trailer, if you've got three trailers on a lot, and the thing is not enforced, maybe every one of them is $140.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're gonna, but if y'all gonna offend somebody, where it's them or whether it's me or what you do. And I'd rather talk to be them, but I like to be them.
But the problem is if you've got one property owner that owns this piece of property and he's paying his one story, his children or friends or whoever come and bring in two or three more,
mm-hmm.
then that's not on the record.
Let me make a suggestion. I've done a lot of thinking about this RV situation. Because I've got some friends that they keep in at Cedar Island. We've got my attention about it. And I rode around Sunday afternoon and looked at the same property where there's four under one big shelter over there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they got it, it's all in one lot, and it's grandfather bed.
No, sir, if we address that situation, I got an email today.
All right. Well, my point is this. We don't have a tracking system of who brings in an RV and connects it. Mm-hmm. I say if you go to put an RV in at the beaches or wherever, you need to come down here and you pay your
permit.
$100 puts your RV in. And then we can get a database, go get somebody hired at the inventory where all these RVs are located, find out the ones that are not in compliance with the ordinance, and make them comply.
Well, like I said, you're going to have to offend somebody.
You have to offend somebody.
Whether it's Pam or whether it's me or Lee or any or you know.
Now, RVs don't really bother me, except when you just, it's just too many in one place.
Don't bother me, but when you've got three or four right here, they're all sharing one water bill, they're all sharing one.
You know what, one grinder pump?
Yeah, one grinder pump, you know, paying the share and the taxes right there, yeah. A bunch behind me. That's what they do. They got four RVs there, they got one power pole, they got one grinder pump, and they're all using that.
And
but me, you know, I'm paying for the full ceiling. It's kind of owes me off. Plus it drops mine and his property values.
Yeah,
I mean, we've had houses for sale how long ago?
Mine's over a year.
Yeah, people come look at the houses and they look over there and say, "No, we want this house." I don't know. I don't like it. Nothing I can do about it, but we need to rewrite that rule that Lonnie House made some kind of way. Now, I gave Sean a copy of all that. It's all in black and white, easily enforced, if we have it. Got it right there. It's easily enforced. I mean, just...
Well, this business about you can have one camper per lot. Mm-hmm. And Scott said you can have two.
Then Scott says you can have two.
That's Scott says business.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
I've seen people down there, and they must think Scott says it's 12 months a year. So there's two there all the time.
Yeah, two. Now they're moving in three.
And they're down three and four.
Well, I tell you, I guess I've been ingrained all my life to work the North Fork Silver Railroad just about all my life. And when I left, we had 2,782 rules in a rule book. All right, they could fire me for anyone they wanted to in there if I violated it. So I know what rules are supposed to be done and how they're supposed to be enforced. But down here, nothing is enforced. And you know that too, Malcolm.
Well, I won't say nothing, but this one's not. And you know, we're a small county, I'll say that again. We got a half-time code enforcement person.
Yeah.
And to do what we need to do just with RVs would take a full-time position. Mm-hmm. Because you've got to identify the parcels. And the RVs, you've got to go look up the ordinance and see if the grandfather is, whether they should have one there or two or three or five. And, or else you need to take the ordinance and make it simple. But if you bought a lot with the anticipation that we had an ordinance that I can have two on there, and then you take it back and say you can't have a one, I don't know where we stand legally on that.
I think we're getting off the subject.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about RVs, and that's what you were talking about.
Right, but if we can talk about our waste problem, and then maybe at another workshop talk about
RVs.
This RV situation. But since it's already 9 o'clock, and we still got a lot more stuff to do.
I'm hungry too.
Yeah, but I appreciate your input. Thank you very much.
All right. Okay, when do we do all this?
Anybody else?
Maybe in my lifetime.
Okay. So, Gary, tell us in a nutshell one more time what your suggestion is.
My suggestion is just look at this plan and see if it's feasible. And the whole thing of that is whoever generates the waste is going to pay for it, except for household garbage. I think we can orchestrate it financially at the roll-off site. Jim, come up if we could make one huge dump site or something like that. And I'm open to anything, but We are not controlling roll-off sites as far as everything coming in. There's no way to control the way we're set up. There's a guy up there the other day, I pulled up there, and he had a van, and he had a sticker, and he had a house somewhere. And I said, he had a bunch of carpet. I go, he's pulling big pieces out of this big van. And I said, You overhauling your, recarpeting your house? He says, no, I brought that from Panama City.
What did you tell him?
I told him to go on back to Panama City.
Okay. Well, thank you for all your time that you put into this and research. LaWanda, thank you.
Sure. Yeah.
So I'm assuming that the board wishes to review the materials and then give us some guidance, because I know we still have contractors who are interested in using our incinerator, and I think it would be simple to institute the system for contractors. We just need some direction from.
Well, I'm going to move quickly because we're into the spring now, and everybody's redoing and building and all this, that, and the other, and then we're going to soon be into the summertime. We've got more people coming in. And so I don't want to wait until a month from now to the next workshop and talk about it and then have to, go back into another meeting. So
I'm gonna get that road. We got to get that road. And I talked to contractors and four of them, and they're willing to cut it up in short pieces. And they all willing, they're ready to do it. And they're ready to pay, you know.
Yeah. So we could ask the county attorney to draft an ordinance for contractors if the board wishes.
For me, I'd say yes, go ahead.
I agree with that.
Now, so I have 140 for everybody, regardless.
And 140 for everybody? On the solid waste, I don't know if we have to do an ordinance, you just have to.
It's by resolution.
By resolution.
I'd say put it on there.
Put it on there, and I would hope that Gary would make us a firm recommendation. This is the plan I want to do as far as the limbs and the CND. And here's the rate schedule I recommend the board follow, and let us look at it.
And if you will, on the rates, just look at the rates and see if you think it's, you know, if that's what you guys think is a good, fair rate.
Well, or break even on this deal, or make a little bit.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. What I don't want to do is that you're working all day on Saturday, and somebody could get there, and somebody said, oh, you can't bring but two loads, or three loads. We need to somehow or another figure out a way to facilitate that.
And if we get, like we're doing, building this inventory of cans, we can do the swaps right then, bring in a truck driver, he swaps them out, and then we just catch up through the week, the following week. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Well, just like the limbs, if you knew you had a dumpster far enough away from the other ones, were able to put the limbs in, yeah, and they couldn't contaminate them, you could run and get them and go dump them by your incinerator.
And run them right back. And even use them for C&D.
Right.
We have done that in the past.
Right. That helped that.
It's going to be fun, but that's what we're here for.
Okay, number five, the board will further discuss the leasing of heavy equipment.
So I believe at the last strategic planning session, the direction of the board was for us to bring some numbers back to the board of our repair and maintenance costs for the last 5 years, and to also conduct a survey of customers of capital lease to see what type of satisfaction that they had with the program. So we did a customer survey, and we are passing that out to the board. And we also have 5 years of R&M for the board to review. I think that as far as solid waste, the R&M isn't too bad. It's fairly consistent, except in 2016-17, and that was for a new transmission, I believe. The public works numbers are a little more painful, and it looks like there's been a pretty steady increase in repair and maintenance over the last 5 years. In 2013-14, it was roughly $65,000, and in 16-17 and 17-18, it jumped up to $85,000. We could easily lease a piece of heavy equipment.
That's $20,000.
And let me, on my trust, what's deeming me besides a little bit the cash flow is the downtime.
Mm-hmm.
Mine's getting hit with small stuff, hoses, hydraulic, you know, just like I got one today that's going to Lake City tomorrow. We've only got 3 trucks in the county to run the whole county with tarping system. When you get down to 2 or 1, it's just, it's
can't keep up.
You can't. It's impossible.
Well, and for solid waste especially, we have trucks. I think we have a 2015 Mack that has $239,000. That's the newest truck that we have as far as. And then we have a 1999 International that has over 1,000,000 miles on it. And then there's everything in between. And we have similar numbers with the dump trucks. The newest truck we have for Public Works is a 2016 18-yard with 81,000 miles. And the oldest truck is a 1992 model that only has 170,000 miles, which tells me nobody wants to drive that one. And then we have a 12-yard 2000 with 467,000. a 2001 with 564,000 miles.
And we realize we need something. Tell us about this leasing.
Well, when we interviewed surrounding counties, we did not receive any bad news. Everyone was very happy with the program. I didn't see, everyone seems extremely satisfied. Some of the leases are fairly new. This is, a fairly new program. Except for Madison County, they have been participating for 7 years. Liberty County, 4 or 5 years. And they seem very happy, which I could understand because you get a new truck every year. So our recommendation to the board is that we use our 1 cent funding and consider maybe starting kind of small and leasing 2 trucks for public works and 2 trucks for environmental services. That way we could see if we like it and at least improve some of the fleet that we have currently. We have $180,000 of 1 cent money budgeted for the purchase of a new truck. It would take about a third of that, I think, to lease 4 vehicles. Because it's a little under $20,000 a year. It's 18 for a dump and a little less for a, it's 18 for a roll-off and a little less for a dump truck.
So your recommendation is to get 4 trucks.
Yes, ma'am.
And it's still going to save us money. I would try it out, see how it works. Mm-hmm. And I don't see a problem with it.
No problem at all. That's the way to go. I talked to another contractor about it that rents a bunch of trucks, and he said it's a no-brainer to rent them trucks. He said you don't have to buy no tires, you don't have to buy no transmissions, you don't have to worry about the warranty. He just,
Now we'll have to buy tires.
I know. You're not gonna wear them out in 15 months.
Oh yes, sir. I understand.
You're not gonna wear them out.
Yeah, but put the tires after 15 months back on your new vehicle.
That's right.
So they'll run a while. You got to buy the tires.
So we just wanted to bring this information back to the board, and if your recommendation is that we pursue this and put it on the agenda for the it would be the second meeting in April, we would like to start working on this. And you'll still vote on it. You'll still have some time to consider it.
Yeah, we need to go ahead and get the order in.
They don't.
Right.
Especially not the roll-off trucks, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and do it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, here, that's the truck.
Okay, number 7, the board to discuss the draft speed hump policy.
I wish our attorney was here for this discussion, but from my our direction at the last strategic planning session is that we wanted to review this draft policy and make any edits or changes or suggestions and bring it back for discussion.
I think the one thing we were talking about is the percentage of people it would take to get this passed. I think it was 65% had to agree to it. Is that what it says? If you look on the second page, under 3C.
So you have to have an applicant to initiate this request for speed humps.
Yes.
And this applicant will obtain a petition from these people that traverse the street. And once they get 66%, in favor.
Now, I don't believe this, that this is still a draft policy. I don't believe this was ever approved by the Board of County Commissioners. I think that there were some concerns about this particular policy, and I, from what I recall, and y'all have to remind me, the last time our attorney, you know, we discussed that, he had some concerns.
Now, on 3F, Madam Chair, if all of this applicant gets a 66%, and it gets to the Board of County Commissioners, then the applicant shall fund and obtain an encroachment permit to construct the humps and hire and fund the contractor to build it.
That's ridiculous.
That's the same thing as saying there won't be any fee humps.
Nobody's going to do that.
Nobody's going to do all that.
I think it should be, you know, we just decide what percentage you have to have to do it, and then once there's discussion and interest to the government, that maybe we send out letters to everybody on that street and get their input and see where we go from there. But I think we do have to, you know, it talks about having the get some data here in terms of speeding and the number of cars. And again, in some areas, that's very seasonal.
Correct.
For instance, that's a beach.
Right.
If you go during scallop season, you're going to have a whole bunch. If you go during December, it's not going to get very many.
And I will say that back in 2015, that the direction of the then county administrator, when there was a similar request, was that the board prefers to address the issue through the use of signs in coordination with law enforcement rather than speed humps.
But that doesn't work.
I understand. I know this has been discussed through the years. So, and I don't know if anyone has any suggestions. It looks like this has come up multiple times, and it's never been approved by the board for one reason or the other.
Well, I brought this up again because it was brought up when Commissioner Spradley was here, and I know that on the main road on Keaton Beach, on it down to Hodges Park during the summer, and other times too, speeding is a real concern. And during the summer, you have lots of people, lots of children, lots of people on golf carts. Even now, you've got a lot of people on golf carts and bicycles and walking, and people literally have no regard for the speed limit.
Can I make a suggestion?
Say again?
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Get rid of these speed bumps altogether. Put deputies down there writing tickets.
That's a good idea, but in reality, it's not going to happen.
If we have put sheriff's deputies out there and tell them, do your job.
But I can't tell the sheriff to do what to do. We cannot direct the sheriff to do something.
Understood, but if we have ordinances and policies for source revenue for the county, he collects revenue for the county, does he not?
Where does sheriff tickets money go to the county?
They come from my office and they distribute it all kind of agencies.
All kind of agencies. We don't have to get much of it over here, do we? Or any other. Let me make a suggestion. We could ask Conrad to draft us another policy.
That was going to be my suggestion.
and I'd like to see you the policy that we have to have an applicant. Somebody on the, what is that road? Keaton Beach Marina Road?
Keaton Beach Drive.
Keaton Beach Drive. Somebody has to be the applicant and fill out the paperwork and go around and get the 66% of the signatures. Then once this person does that legwork, then it goes to the engineer department. Who knows all the rules about constructing roads and how far apart you have to put these things. And I'm not in favor of these things that go boom, boom, keep y'all all the way from that.
Right.
But they make
a hump.
A hump.
Not a bump.
Slow it up. They're slowing you down. And then once we get a recommendation from the county engineer that this is a safe, it's feasible to do this. 66% of the people want it. Then we need to decide. I thought, Mr. Who's going to pay for it? The county? I don't know how expensive these things are. $3,000 a piece?
Yeah, just the asphalt alone would be a couple grand.
Yeah. And you put them in series of about three?
Obviously, depending on the characteristics and how long the road is.
But say you got $3,000 put in a set, or $3,000 for each one in the set.
It would be, if you used a load of asphalt, it's $2,000 for every load of asphalt.
Woo! Okay. All right, Ursula, tell us how fun this.
I talked to the road department because all the residents at Cedar Island, especially on the main road, have wanted a speed bump coming in there for years. Traffic doesn't, the number of traffic vehicles that come in the winter slows down. They seem to speed up more so in the winter. I mean, in the summer, it's a train wreck. And the road department, I believe, quoted it was either $4,000 or $6,000 just for one speed bump, and we had to pay for it. And I said, well, I'm talking about like maybe just a little Dead Man's Curve where they have that, you hear the noise.
You'll have a lot of complaints with that because it wakes people up at night.
And then he said that that wouldn't work in that area, that we would have to do what you're talking about, the elevated bump.
I remember Conrad told us that was a liability showing up.
Yeah.
It was between $4,000 and $6,000 just for one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in terms of the liability, everything is a liability.
We don't need
to. I know it's got killed on there.
We don't need to generate one, though. We ain't got the. I mean, but if
it's. What about the liability of all the children and the people on golf carts and the old people walking?
Oh, I'm
saying. You can't walk there, and there are people on the motorcycle.
I heard Conrad said the liability was about these bumps. I don't know if he's talking about the smooth elliptical bump.
So maybe I can send the draft policy to Conrad and ask him for his opinion as far as any liability, and ask him if he could rework this a little bit, and our staff can work on it as well.
Somebody somewhere in City of Tallahassee, you've got them all over the place. Somebody else has probably got a policy about how to pay for them.
Well, we have a draft policy. I'm not sure why it has never been adopted by the board.
Would you just find out from St. Leon County, what is their say? How do they fund it? And what percentage of people have to agree to it? And it'd just be interesting, but if the majority of this board is not interested, there's no need in wasting your time, Conrad's time, or anybody else's time for that matter.
They have speed bumps that keep busy at one time.
But I'm talking about humps.
I know it wasn't actually humps, it was plastic.
Yeah, you had some foot, and they asked about it. What?
People pulled them up and throw them under the
bed. Yeah.
They pulled them up, throw them in the ditch because it's waking them up at night.
Yep, right. But the humps is actually the asphalt that's a big, but you cannot go over it really.
And you got half a sign saying you can go over a hump.
Every one of them has speed hump ahead.
Right,
5 miles an hour, speed ahead.
Now, I do know that the sheriff will be at our next board meeting to discuss some of the grants that the office has been able to obtain. And I do believe that one of them may be a speed enforcement type grant. And it could be, I'm just speculating, but I'm wondering if that grant has perhaps given him more personnel to actually enforce the speed limit. And it could be that situation has changed.
But it's determined by the number of people, right?
Well, yes, ma'am, but I think that's what we're discussing, and that was Commissioner Murphy's suggestion. So it could be that we could reach out to the sheriff's office and see if we could ask for some increased enforcement in that area.
I we can do that. Because if I've been here for 10 years almost, I've had many calls of people complaining about speeders on their streets, including school buses. Mm-hmm. And they, you were told that we don't have enough staff, only got one here, one on this end, or this side or the other. I mean, I'm not saying that to be critical of law enforcement. That has been the case, and I understand that. But my point is, don't think it's going to fix the problem. I just don't think that's going to happen. That's just my humble opinion.
I know the city sets up enforcement on the public road, and if they're not going over 15 miles over the speed limit, they won't even pull it. So if it's 30, they got to be going over 45 before they'll even run them down and give them a ticket. Mm-hmm. So right there, you know, coming by Fort Winn-Dixie there, they'll be doing 50 and 60 miles an hour right there at Winn-Dixie, and they give them a ticket. I talked to one of the policemen about it. He said, yeah, I write tickets every time I sit there. He said, they'll be doing 50 or 60 just before we get to Winn-Dixie on the public there. You know, but he said a lot of them are 40 and just under 45, and that 30 mile an hour zone. And he said, you know, but we don't stop them.
How many are dismissed? Anyone? A lot of them coming. So I've got a side of the computer fixed so I can get you on. You won't know if they're going to
be on. Well, let me just say, is the board interested in this or not? Because I don't want to waste anybody's time.
I mean,
if you're not, that's
in it, but if it's going to cost a lot of money, I think that would kill my interest.
Well, we'd have to certainly have
to identify.
We'd have
to
have this identified, that's right.
50-50 split between the Alphabet and the county, I don't know.
That
work. That won't work.
I mean, it's the county's responsibility to provide for public safety as far as we can afford it. If we can't afford it, we can't afford it. I understand that. But I don't think it's the citizens' responsibility to have to pay for their safety. I mean,
I'm all for us. Let's pursue it. It's the right thing to do.
They won't spend it.
They got to derive it. So if you did it,
it's 20 and then if you run in 50 and you can't get them out of something?
Nobody else.
Just come down and sit at my
house.
I'll put out the traffic counter. I mean, I can collect speed information on if you like.
I don't think it's how many cars is coming by, I think it's how fast they're coming.
I can tell you how fast they're going. We can tell you what hour they were going at.
Really?
How many different vehicles, yes, ma'am. We do that every time we collect traffic information.
Well, about Easter holiday when kids start pushing down to the beach, put it out. And make sure you put it down there for the phone number.
You told me this weekend that every parking space was filled to keep the beach road rent, and they were on the side of the road already.
2 days in a row.
And we're not even in the fishing
season. No. Okay, let's move along. We want to get out of here. Okay, number 8, the board to discuss the draft internship policy.
Well, what I would encourage the board to do, is to review these documents, and we would like to. This is generated in discussion in the strategic planning session. Our engineer discussed with the board the possibility of having an intern for his department.
I'm all for it.
All for it.
But this is a countywide program.
So it's necessary to have to be an engineer intern.
Correct. That's the way this.
I think it was a great idea.
And So I think it's very informative, it's very comprehensive, and if the board agrees, we would like to put this on the upcoming agenda for consideration.
You have a chance to read it, then I'll say yes.
Yes, sir. And the funding would be each department's responsibility. I know Kenneth has identified his funding source for the internship program that he has in mind. But I think it would be nice to be able to partner with our local vocational program or colleges or universities and open this up to some of our students.
I mentioned that about 8 years ago, a couple of times.
So we use the summer youth program. Mm-hmm. I've used it myself three different summers, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not all 100% for it. You want to talk about it? Or?
The only thing I would suggest, and Luana had brought up this question when she was reviewing it with respect to the compensation that's stated in the policy, and that was mimicked after the Department of Transportation, the states. They, irrespective of what department it is, there is a rate if you are at a certain education level, mm-hmm. that being a sophomore, junior, senior, graduate, whatever. Mm-hmm. And her question was, you know, that rate relative to other wages within the county agency. So what I kind of looked at was going back to the pay plan that was approved, the pay study several years back, there is actually a trainee category in there, and it makes reference to if you were to be in a trainee status, suggesting that you don't necessarily have all of the KSAs or knowledge, skills, and abilities of the full position, that it would be suggested that you compensate them at 10-15% less than that position's salary. So what I was thinking and suggesting was that perhaps instead of having hard and fast rates, what we would do is key it off of the position that you're going to be fulfilling, mm-hmm. but let that be at, let's say if you're at a graduate education level, you're at 95% of the average pay plan study wage for that position, 90 for senior, 80 for junior, 70 for sophomore, mm-hmm. vocational. That way it's a tiered approach, and it's a unilateral criteria that's irrespective of what the position is. What the position is based on the pay plan study. So it's not a hard and fast number that you have to put in there, but it's a tiered effect that's representative of your education level.
And I think our suggestion, taking that into consideration, was that something that we could include in the job description. I don't anticipate this generating a large amount of positions within the county, but I think it's something we could easily address within the job description, instead of necessarily having, you don't have hard numbers in that policy, because my concern is that we would bring in an intern who is basically at a student status and pay that person more than our existing staff. And I think we need to take into consideration how to work it in as far as our pay plan and really look at those numbers.
Well, certainly you wouldn't have to offer benefits. Or,
correct.
Or right. If you don't change this, but not every 40 hours, you know?
No, ma'am, that's every pay period. I did the same thing. So it's 40 hours every pay period, not every week. I did the same thing.
So it would be 40 hours for 2 weeks pay period?
Yes, ma'am.
It's up to that. That's the way it was written originally.
Mm-hmm. Bring it back.
Thank you.
Okay, number nine, the board to discuss the master project plan.
Yes.
Okay.
So this list is getting shorter.
That's good.
Yes. So So the projects under construction currently are the library roof replacement, the Harrison Blue Collection Center improvements, the airfield lighting project, Blue Spring Collection Center compactor, Coastal Canal No Wake signage. That is for the Steinhatchee River. Host site, campsite construction, we are obtaining quotes for that. And Forest Capitol Hall generator installation, the equipment has been ordered for that. Under small projects, we have airport property tree removal on site, that's ongoing. Forest Capitol Hall roof repair, that has not been scheduled yet. Animal control storage has not been scheduled. Supervisor of Elections concrete pad and roof, we are obtaining costs, working with the Supervisor of Elections for that. Shade covers for playground equipment at Sports Complex and Hodges Park. The shade covers were quoted at $20,000 each, which was our fear. Relocate the drain near the intersection at Mexico Road and Eagle Beach Boulevard, that is scheduled. And our boat ramp lighting project, we have not moved forward with that as yet. Funded with a start date is the airport property tree removal offsite. We did receive a DOT grant for that. Airport solar farm, feasibility study complete, land transfer complete. Actually, that's not funded. That's in the wrong column, I'm sorry. Transportation enhancement at DOT, which is a sidewalk. To begin design work in 2018, construction scheduled for 2019. Under conceptual awaiting funding, we have Judge Blue office renovation. We have requested a legislative appropriation for some improvements at the courthouse. I do not know if we'll be awarded that as of yet. Resurface Forest Capitol Hall parking lot, we are obtaining measurements for resurfacing now. Security lighting, Forest Capitol Hall parking lot, we actually have signed a contract and to install lighting in the parking lot area, and that will be on the next agenda to ratify my signature. Dead Man's Curve realignment, I believe all of the property owners have been notified and we're awaiting response from them. The Steinhatchee Boat Ramp Docking Project, that project is over budget and we are resubmitting an FDIP grant for that project. And the mobile home renovation, that is not eligible for FEMA reimbursement, so I went back to the staff on that and asked for some options. And I'm waiting for some bright ideas on that situation. Keaton Beach Sand, I believe, our marine agent is still working on that project. And then under our road projects, we have Hawk Road is under design. East Ellison Road is right of way and permitting review. And Kenneth, you need to let me know if you have any updates. North Ellison Road, right of way and permitting review. Foley Cutoff Road is under design. San Pedro Road was advertised, the bids are over budget. And we requested supplemental funding from DOT. Kingston-Tanner Road is under design. Pinecrest Road is under design. Ellison Frith is awaiting design. Gas Plant Road is awaiting design. Slaughter Road awaiting design. Road striping is almost complete. We have some warranty work scheduled. And Contractors Road is partially complete and awaiting DOT program. And that is all we have left.
Okay. There was nothing about head constraints, right?
No, it's on there.
Who was that?
Construction.
Yes. That's under construction. We're obtaining quotes now. And
to do what?
For the concrete path and to move forward with that construction project for the camp host.
Okay. If I may, I want to share an email with you and the board that I received. It says, this was from her name, and dear Commissioner Fiegel, my husband and I are snowbirds from the state of Michigan, currently traveling from Indian Shores on the Gulf to the panhandle of your beautiful state. We are visiting several springs en route. was spent the night in Perry and drove to the Hampton Springs site this morning. This historic site is beautiful, and we enjoyed strolling and photographing the park. It was a pleasant visit. However, I want to let you know the condition of the restrooms are disgusting. They were beyond filthy. There was a bird's nest in the sink and disgusting debris on the floor of the ladies' room. I ventured no further. The men's room was no better and littered the remains of a shattered sink. I can't imagine why they were open, even open for use. They were unsafe and unsanitary. The neglect appears to be long-standing. It left a horrible memory of what was a pleasant visit. As the Taylor County Board of County Commissioners is listed on one of the park signs, I believe you have the authority and responsibility to address and resolve this issue. Sincerely, Evelina Bright. This was so embarrassing. And I know we've been talking about this and talking about it and talking about it.
We kicked that can all the way down at Town Hall Railroad.
And this is... And I said the lady, I apologize, I said, you know, we have a committee, and, you know, I tried to get some fun. I hope you don't judge our whole county on that, but this was so embarrassing for people to come through and to see that and say it. So we need to do something, whether it's close that daggum thing, until we can do something, close it up, barricade it. I don't care if you have to put dump truck loads of rock around it so people can't get in, whatever. This is embarrassing. I mean, it's not, I know you just, you know, I'm not saying it's your fault.
I understand, and I think my fear would be there are so many ways into that park. I don't know how we would keep people out.
Well, they can't drive in there, and would they have to go around through the woods and come in another way?
They do, and that's what they do.
Well, then we need to somehow have a barricade.
I think.
And we have to have a fence like maybe a market. It's time of year that people really don't use it now. I mean, they don't really come up now. What we need to do is shut them bathrooms up where they can't open them and tear their nails up in them because they need fixing. If you don't have somebody living there, shutting that gate at dark and opening the daylight, you're not going to have, you can't keep no bathrooms there. They can't keep the bathrooms straight to keep the beach at Hodges Park. So they sure can't keep them down there with nobody looking, you know.
I don't know how they're getting the law. I mean, we have shut the bathrooms more than once.
Well, we need to lock them up where they can't get in, barricade, whatever, and put a sign out there, no restroom facility, so that people like this
don't wander in. I understand.
I
made my first trip out there last year. In addition to the restrooms, the parking lot itself was covered in UVC paint.
Yeah, I mean, so it's not, I remember you saying.
And then they come out of the woods from the campground at Rockies out there. The crackheads come up in there and do their thing up in there. And there was needles and stuff like that everywhere.
But what would it take then to put a fence that people can't get over between the RV park and... I think it would be easier at this point just to try to get that host site constructed and
get somebody out there.
And get somebody out there. Then to go through the expense of constructing a huge fence that would probably be climbed over. I mean, people seem to be very persistent as far as getting in there, especially with the summer coming. I know we have obtained the quotes and we've worked on some other aspects of this. I think we're getting close to the point where we can start this program. I think I would, if it were up to me, I would say that our energy would be better spent to move forward with this. And I realize there's been
I'm all for that. We need to go ahead and do that. We've talked it over a year, and we need to go ahead and do that. And that solve that issue there. And then we can redo
it. Now, and we don't have to do a set tank.
We could fix the dump, we could fix the bathroom back up once they got there.
So we could tie in the bathroom, the water, and the sewer.
You could be closing it?
I believe so.
So all we got to do is pour slab and get a fire pump.
Well, we have to actually get somebody out there, but...
that might be our headache.
I don't think so. I think that if we tap into the campsite host program that is nationwide, that we could probably tap into that.
And you know, you're going to have to get the right person, because most of these people, I would think they're going to a nice park and they're just going to be there to just take care of a few little problems here and there. They don't realize the extent of the problems that we have there. And if you have a problem from nearby, I mean, it's going to take a really right person to deal with what they're going to have to deal with.
I know. But I think once we got through the initial portion, that it would settle down. Once there is a presence there, I think that things would settle down. Because if you recall, when we talked about this last year, you know, there was a discussion of just surrendering ownership of the park or closing it. And there was so much public outcry at that time that was not palatable. So, and I do realize there's been a delay in this project because we're short-staffed in that area. But I think if we just continue trying to inch it forward, we're getting very close.
Well, we had a public outcry. We did, but we still have horrible conditions. Nothing has changed in terms of the public's abuse of what could be a beautiful place. And I mean, you know, when you start trying to get somebody out there, I guess you're going to have to say, we want you to keep the crackheads out and the this and that and the other.
See, that may be a safety issue for people who
I'm telling you. I think it's going to be harder than what you think.
But well, I remember last year, Mr. Menzi approached me about putting two officers out there. They'd be more than happy to go out there and live in a camper. And while they were off duty, they could control the place and such as
that's
that.
That's what we need.
Yes, and then that way it would cut down the liability on the county, because they are actually a licensed officer.
And they have the authority to do
something that were willing or interested at that time, but that's been, what, year and a half ago.
And how do you think about that, Commissioner?
Well, I don't think so much about that, but Joe Manley offered to take care of that place.
He did.
If we would let him, and he would love to add on to the back of his trailer park right there, and on his property there, and leave some from us. And
we can't do that.
I know. Well, no.
You got almost $1 million in grant money.
Yeah, grant money won't allow us to do that.
Do what?
The grant money won't allow you to do it. They got almost $1 million in grant money for that park.
But they said after a certain length of time that it wasn't important. Now, that's what.
We have to go back and look at the grant, but I'm
concerned. I think that's what somebody said. I mean, I'm not sure about the leaf business, but I'm pretty sure that after a certain period of time, they said it didn't, it wasn't important.
Mm-hmm. But so we, I wanted to check
that out. Mm-hmm. If he had it cleared out between his park and there, and he shut the gates and opened them every day and kept the place clean, I mean.
A lot of times it's held in perpetuity with grants like that, but I'll check.
Yeah, let's check it.
If not his people coming out of his park, is coming in there. They couldn't do them woods off the highway. Right?
Oh, I didn't say
coming in there.
I don't know where they're coming
from. It's not his renters that's doing it. His people coming in there on four-wheelers and all that kind of stuff.
I think people are coming from wherever, because that's always been the location, maybe not always, but in the past, I've heard that it's been a location where people like to party a little bit.
It shift changed at the prison. That's the meeting point. It shift changed. And that's what's happening at night right there. That's a known fact down that area right there. The neighbors will tell you that. When shift changed at the prison, there's a crowd there every time.
Okay, well, you'll follow up.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, number 10, final item for the board to discuss strategic planning sessions follow up.
So, I'm busy. So, what we did was we just compiled all of the follow up and created a column where I could comment it was completed or not completed or when it's on the next agenda, and we have made a lot of progress. I don't know what percentage I've completed, or we've completed, but it's, I think, over 50%.
Good. Any questions about anything?
When will we be complete? I guess my question to the board is, once we have everything completed, would you just like me to provide follow-up?
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, sit here and look at this and read it all right now.
Oh, that's fine.
You know,
fine.
I appreciate you putting the time and effort into this. Just, you know, I know we're not going to let you just fall through the cracks. You know, this is just a good way for us to know where we are in case somebody asks. Just for our personal
knowledge.
Thank you. Yes, you've done a good job on all these things. And
thank
staff
you.
Has helped you.
Yes.
And I know y'all spent a considerable amount of time. And it's very much appreciated. Anybody got anything else? Okay, if not, let's go home. Thank y'all.
All right, we got 2 minutes left. We're all
left. Believe it or not, we started at 10 o'clock. Good meeting.
That's good. That's a lot of money. Yeah.
Sure.
Learned a lot about railroad.
Yeah. I walked the whole country. We spent money there.
And where?
The whole country. The whole Congress. I just had the House of Representatives.
Oh.
We heard the way we run.
You did it in one day?
Yeah.